in respect of the HRD strategy that we implemented at present, we had interventions in the area of internships. We have 100 interns that we recruited, and we are also having a target of 30 external full-time bursaries and 40 part-time bursaries that were to award. And we then have 49 part-time, so which is above the target. We finally gave the first to 49 part-time bursaries, and also the figure that I will then have to confirm is what, how many of the full-time bursaries, and the CEO will provide that chair, I will have it with me. Okay, so it was 30 and for external bursaries, and it's confirmed that we have awarded 30. And then in respect of equity and growth, disabilities, our target is 50% women, 90% black, and 2% in terms of people living with disabilities. And basically, we have our target, our where we were at the, on the third quarter, we had reached 56% target, above the target in respect of women. However, at senior management level, we're still lagging behind. And then in respect of black employees, we're sitting at 91%, and then people with disabilities also 2.7%. So we have met our target, actually we exceeded our target in all of those areas.
I was confused. At one point we asked questions, but I think I'm going to ask it again. I hear that the DGC is, in terms of officials who didn't perform, they give penalties. Interested what kind of penalties that we are actually talking about. Thanks.
For instance, like, it may not have to do with other persons, women, black, and so on. But I'm particularly interested in understanding the percentage for persons with disabilities. To say 2.6 or something like that, 2.7. To say 2.7, it may look like it's a good number, but what is it in terms of actual numbers, not percentage? What are we talking about?
Thanks, Chair. It's 45 people in the organization of 1,648. That's how we worked out the 2.7. And for black people, we're sitting at 1,493. And women, 927. So that's how we worked out the percentages. And for penalties, honorable members, in terms of the performance management scheme that is provided in terms of the public service regulations, there are measures that you have to follow. Firstly, when you do formal assessments, there is a score, there is a verification statement where you provide scores. So when you score yourself, you allow the individual to score themselves, and they may say, for instance, they score themselves a 3 or 4. When you then, as a supervisor, revise and have a discussion with the employee, you then confirm that this target has not been met, or if it's in progress, this is then more or less the percentage, and having taken into account the enabling conditions, some of the delays, as you will hear me when I explain, are outside of officials' control. It's dependent on other people for us to succeed in meeting the target. So you get a 2 as a score instead of 3 or 4. The incentive system of the PM that is outlined within the PMDS system would enable you to get a bonus, and you get a bonus if at least you achieve it about 4 and 4.5 and 5 in respect of the scoring. So that's the penalties that you have. Then over and above that, if there is, the performance is low, the desirable level, below the satisfactory level, then there's a process that kicks in terms of engaging the employee and make representations the point where if you issue warnings and you also report to the public service and to DPSA, especially for senior managers, and therefore you are also allowed to then get to exit officials if they are unable to perform or move them to other positions where they might be adequately skilled to perform or capacitated to perform. So that at this point in time, we're talking mid-year, we're not necessarily, sorry, we're not at a point where you can confirm that you've taken these measures to a point of executing certain officials. So you, the penalties are more in respect of not rewarding non-performance, but making sure that the scoring in terms of the EMT system is then appropriately handled. Thank you.
I think it was important that maybe we raised this so that down in terms of the people with disabilities across the board, across departments. You never find them in the senior management, middle management, even junior management. They are at most cases at the elementary level. For instance, DG, we can get a reflection into where are they in terms of leadership and management.
All right, thank you. I think, honourable member, I'll try and see whether we can convey that information and provide it before the end of the session or even invite you to the honourable member. Thank you. Next.
Colleagues, the questions I was asking, or not aware that they are in the document. They are there. What did they was dealing with that one wonderful painted picture. But in the document there are details. Now that's where I would be looking at. I'm looking at the detail, not that this painted picture. Ono?
Okay, you know, it's just that when we move on to a topic like that, to say where you are, I was nowhere near where we look, where you're supposed to be looking. We need to be guided and say, look, you turn to page one. Otherwise, and I'm still hanging around the front of the book. Lost. Please, thank you.
Yeah, that's the problem with people who are too old like me and you. if we can assist colleagues, I think after the... If the last annex... If you go to the last annex, they've got the very, very last. Are you there? Just as Mabila, you are still young. Just as you the one of... Yes.
Sir, without a little belabor the point on just administration and so on, we also must move to other issues. And we might be taking some. But just on this one, when we talk bonus, the understanding at times is that DG, you don't necessarily need to give a bonus to somebody for doing their work. So even if people get highest score is five, it may be within their score, within their performance. So even if it's 100%, it's 100% of what they are supposed to do. Bonus is supposed to be an extraordinary performance, outstanding performance beyond or greater than five, to say this particular official has done more than was expected, have been very creative, very innovative, and very initiative, what the department never expected. But to say a person a bonus for what was expected of them, it's not really odd. Thanks.
Yes, thanks. So I thought when I said it, honourable members, I was saying that for purpose of presenting, we're just now running through, because you have the document that gives all the details. We're running through there because of the time limitations, so that we focus more on the work in progress and the areas where they're off target and explain where, what I'm doing in order to be able to meet the target. But if I may come back to the honourable members' earlier comment about the achievement, The PMDF system allows for a score of 1 to 5, okay? And 3 is what is affected. So all of us, when we've done everything, we should be 3, not 4, not 5. So 4 is when you then demonstrate additional work, when you demonstrate innovation and creativity and so on. And that is where, that's why even when we then show you at the end, you show that the pie graph did not show where we have exceeded, but we have information about which targets already have we been able to exceed, whilst we have those others that are lagging behind. So if you then, when you look at the assessment of the individual, it's the totality of the performance, both in terms of where you're falling short and where you are exceeding and where you are. Just average.
That's what the colleagues can then agree, since we have the information here, that the DG will then zoom in areas where we have not done well. Because we'll be here for 2 weeks if we proceed as they say. Because we have the information, we can read this information at our own. In fact, we can be perusing it as she takes us through those matters. But there is nothing stopping members from raising any issue. But I'm saying, let's focus on targets that we have not been able to meet and what the reasons are. Are we agreed on this? Oh, sorry, colleagues. Thank you,
honorable members. So the last one on the slide was then on the grievance, where we did not meet our target of 30 days. We were sitting at 33 days as the average number of days that it took for us to resolve the cases. And here again, the challenge has been in respect of grievances that are lodged with people that are in Antarctica or Marion Islands. And just the time it takes to resolve those cases, because those people are not necessarily here at EPs. It's something that made us not to meet the target, but we are looking at corrective measures to make sure that in future we are going to be able to meet the average target. Then on the next slide, you see the red. I will only talk to the red, which is out of target. We were supposed to have rolled out the master systems plan in respect of nine project areas. The master systems plan is an instrument or a strategic document that outlines how the organization's business processes would be improved, both in terms of automating environmental impact assessment processes and also other business processes. So we have 9 areas, and out of those 9 areas, 5 are on target, but the 4 is what is holding us backwards, and the problem was related partly to procurement delays, because we have processes between ourselves and CETA that take quite an inordinate amount of time, and also there are 2 projects that have been withdrawn by the line managers. So this is a centrally coordinated activity, again, under the office of the COO, and we are not going to meet 9 in terms of those projects that we had planned. But we probably, hopefully, that we will be able by the end of the year if all of the procurement processes have been attended to. So that is one area that is a challenge for us, and I think we hope that the action plan that we put in place will make us achieve the target, even if it's in the next financial year. Next. In this program area of access to information, honorable members, and improving sector education awareness, we are on target in all of those areas of milestones and as outlined in the document. So I'll not waste time. I will then jump to the next area, which is an area of knowledge management. In respect of The first one relates to the South African National Environmental Information Metadata Database finalized. We seemingly may not meet the target there because of the procurement process. Where are you now? You're on the wrong slide. Okay. All right. And then in respect of, why do I have different documents? You have a green flag, but not a red. Okay, can I come back to that? Because I have delays, but it looks like here it's achieved in the slide that's what you're showing there. But the other aspect was related to NEMA Chapter 5 implementation systems. We have amended in the past parliament the regulated timeframes for us as competent authorities, both national and provincial, to conclude and issue environmental authorizations in the EIA system. And honorable members may hear that from time to time, the people in the economic sector or developers say that we delay development because the EIA process takes long. And therefore, we revise the time frames and improved the streamlining of the system. And basically, we want to automate the whole application system, and that we needed also to produce the regulations in terms of the Act, the amended Act, and those regulations also have to serve before Parliament at least 10 days before the implementation. So the Minister has already published the EIA regulations. The appeals regulations are still to be published. So basically, I think honorable members can then expect to see those publications once submitted to Parliament. Next slide. In respect of the, again, still on the, in the area of knowledge information in respect of a number of peer-reviewed scientific publications, we were lagging behind because our target for the year is 18, and we're supposed to have met 9 on the peer reviews. And the doctors, the 12 peer-reviewed publications were not ready at the end of the third quarter. The key doctors in the room, from the oceans, Dr. Maeki, so will substantiate, but they have now confirmed and have looked at their plan that they will be on track to meet the peer reviews for 18 as the target. Then in respect of the sustainable development environmental outlook, we were supposed to have published, the outlook has been concluded. However, the minister, because we have chapters that talk to water, energy and other and work of other departments, the minister has asked that she wants to correspond with those ministers before she publishes the report, but the report is ready. So the delay is basically that we have not yet made it public as a record that we've produced as a department. On local government, we have a local government strategy that provides a premise for us to support the implementation of environmental programs in local government. However, we have had delays in respect of the municipalities themselves publishing their environmental management plan, and that we will advance as high and support the municipalities until those are published. We cannot then confirm any better progress than just work in progress. We still have to reach that target.
Why is still on that? What is the effect of this non-movement by these local authorities? What is the effect on our work?
Honourable members, I think that the reason why we prescribed a need for municipalities to have a non-environmental management plan, we were attempting to make sure that they do perform the environmental management functions. In most of the municipalities, there is limited activities that are performed, basically because there are no resources that are located, and therefore the functions are not performed adequately. So the effect is then basically that we don't have desirable environmental management functions performed by municipalities. And we can talk, whether you talk in the area of waste management, I think some of the members that attended the waste conference yesterday in Mpumalanga, it already outlines what are the challenges that we have in respect of waste management in municipalities. What are the challenges we have also in respect of air quality management in municipalities, especially those that are in the areas of hotspots. What are the challenges in respect of creating open spaces that would enable land management and also make sure that at least the communities of the municipalities that are being served have got a good and effective quality of life. So because there is not, even some of the municipalities that even have municipal parks, they don't quite manage them well, and therefore even in terms of indigenous species, both in terms of knowledge management and even catchment management, there are various other challenges. You can see river pollution in some of the municipalities is a reality. So that is basically the reason. Our support that we provide, because we are a regulator than an implementer at a local government level, and we provide parameters. For instance, there are standards for them to adhere to in terms of waste services. We set up national standards. We have set up a standard for them to manage landfill sites. We set up standards in terms of biodiversity management in those areas. Beaches is their function in terms of management of beaches. In some instances, we provided input in terms of finding the infrastructure that they require, but to maintain it is a big issue. So that is one of the challenges and shortfalls that we can see in municipalities in respect of them giving effect to environmental management functions. The next slide relates to effective knowledge and information management for the sector. Then in the next slide, enhanced international environmental governance, all of those areas in terms of targets and green, so we're meeting the target there. The next slide, we're meeting the targets. The red was in Q2, so it means that we have managed to catch up in terms of the biannual update report that we needed to submit to the United Nations Framework and Convention Secretariat. And that report was presented to Parliament last year. And then the last indicator or target for program one relates to the finalization of the national communications and report, which again is outlined is a requirement in terms of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, and that is work in progress. And Julie Beaumont, DTG, that's responsible for this work, has given the indications that the plan that they put in place will make them catch up and will be able to meet the target by the end of the financial year. So for Program 1, honorable members, we have met targets and at about 6-7%, which in terms of the number of targets and milestones, we had 52 targets and milestones for this program, and we've met 35, and that's what translates to 67%. And then 15 of them are work in progress, and there's only one that is off target, which is the target that I explained earlier on in respect of the master system plan. I'm going to request Dimpo to continue program two, and then I can come back. Thank you.
I don't want members to say, but we did not get an opportunity to broadly deal with program one, so that we don't have to come back to program one. So if there are any issues members you want to raise on program one, your program one, amongst other issues, speaks to is the demographics of the department showing representativity of our people as a whole, amongst others. Secondly, it speaks to plans that we have put on the table, on systems, on the performance, on human development. But what worries me most is on local governments, you're saying that there are no environmental plans. Does that speak to all local authorities? Because so that we don't make sweeping statements. Because indeed, as members of parliament, one of the areas that we'll have to do, and it's already there in our report, is to go and interact with local authorities. So we must have a sense of a plan for environment, so that we have a sense where we need to go. Members, do you want to reflect broadly on this program? Let's welcome Serembe. Long time not seen. But you are welcome, honorable member.
Nyabonga Mugas. Not that much, but just to get more clarity on the master system plan, as you are saying that you have a challenge in that field. But to me, it means now for the department to satisfactorily meet the demand. That must be the way, I mean, everybody must say it is in place. Now, I'm just thinking, how are you working if your master system plan is not effective now? And how do you convince me that very soon we will have that master system plan in place? That's where, I mean, that's what I would be happy to see. All the performance in it seems to be controlled by that master plan and systems plan. Thank you.
Well, if there are no other interventions from members, but of course we must say, that's the good part of us oversighting you, because we then have a sense where you are. And of course, also, yourselves, you then also realize that, look, this is where we also need to move with speed before the end of the financial year, so that you deal with whatever issues that you have got to deal with. The one area where we have not done well, can we be assured that come the end of the financial year, you would have done justice to that plan?
Honourable members, I'm going to ask the CEO to come in, but when the master systems plan is in place, the master systems plan includes or contains projects, key projects for the department that would enable improvements in terms of how we deliver services. And the CEO will just talk to the details in terms of which of those projects are being delayed. And as I indicated, partly because of procurement processes, but also there is two projects that have been drawn by line managers in the department. Because for a project to be included in master systems plan, there is initial work that's done by the branch to make a compelling argument on why we need to then develop a system in order to provide this service or to at least undertake this activity in the organization. So those two were withdrawn, and CEO will confirm then the status overall. And then also similarly on local government, we had all municipalities, but again she will then give an indication of where we don't have environmental management plans that are public by the municipalities. But I think that after she made that comment, there are areas where surely we're saying that we'll be able to catch up. But then there are areas where we feel the work in progress, not the target not being achieved, basically, because if you've only procured now, in March or even in February, you needed to implement over time, and therefore won't be able to reach to conclude this process before the end of the financial year. So we can then say that in a few of the areas, honourable members, we will not meet, but we shall not be completely off target. That's the plan that we have.
Thank you, honourable members, honourable chair. Good morning to all of you. First, in terms of the local government support strategy, I really think here that the committee will benefit with a detailed presentation on that, because we have embarked on a full strategy that has a differentiated approach, talking to 54 priority municipalities. We have gone down from the from our approach of supporting district municipalities to now go to key local governments as well. And if I say differentiated approach, it's differentiated in two ways. The first way that we differentiate is the type of support that we provide, and that relates to both the environmental state, the capacity of the municipality, as well the capacity, we're talking about resources as well as skills, and then also what level of support is there already provided in that specific area of need through other programs, like for example the city's network, CELCO, etc. Then the second level of differentiation, so we use that differentiation to classify the support that we then provide. Then the second level of differentiation is in terms of whether we just create an aging environment, and that is where we're providing tools like, for example, the biodiversity planning tool, etc. That's generally with your more capacitated municipalities that have a level of environmental functions to very deep assistance where there is no capacity and where there are real environmental challenges. It's very difficult to contextualize that now in terms of the environmental management plans, because the environmental management plans is specifically located in the middle of those two. At right at the bottom, we actually use our assistant directors and deputy directors that are deployed in the district to literally compile the environmental management plans for the municipalities. But in the middle there is a requirement of bringing something to the table for us to assist further. So I think also the amber in this regard, we are not going to be 100% on target at the end of the year in terms of the implementation of the local government support. This is our first year of implementation of this specific strategy. We always had a support program. And in some instances, setting up assistance has taken longer than what we thought we would in terms of where people have to do these environmental management plans, those municipalities in the middle category of differentiation. A lot of detail in there, but we think that we would be around 80% of implementation of the 100% that we've earmarked by the end of the year, because there's far more assistance required from our deployed assistant directors and deputy directors. There's also a level of where there is specific in air quality management and waste management, where local government exercise a regional function in terms of the constitution, where our support relation is different from where we are implementing open space management, environmental programs, etc., which we are just supporting. But we do focus on the least capacitated with the highest ranking of environmental sensitivity. That could be either being very biodiverse, or being a municipality that is already highly impacted by pollution. So you will find municipalities that are in air quality hotspots, and you will find areas that are in the municipalities that are in the biodiversity hotspots as part of the municipality's target where they have no potential. In terms of the master systems plan, just to add on to what the DG said, we have a fully functional master systems plan. And the master system plans range from different information management and project management systems, which most of these nine projects that were referred to are. It's mostly new systems that are introduced in addition to, for example, our electronic document management system, our email system, our national environmental authorization system, which is the registry for EIA. So all of those things are in place. We are on target with the governance of ICT and we've addressed all of the security management. So the entire master systems plan, in other words, the new word that we use for that is the information communication technology strategy, is fully in place. So these projects are the ones that have been added in this financial year to the expansion and the rollout of the master system plan. The Master System Plan is reviewed annually. So I just want to open up my brain here to give you those projects. And some of the important ones that have been achieved, you know, if you look at 9, you equip an information management system with something as important as the whole transfer of the ICT to the new building, which was a major, major target in the NSP that has been achieved. We are also finalizing our move from group-wise to Outlook, which is work in progress here, but that will be finalized by the end of the year. So that big system-wide work. Then we have the systems that have been withdrawn. One has been withdrawn and two have not been approved through the internal supply chain processes. The one that has been withdrawn is related to the internal transport, so that's the travel requests, etc., and that has been abandoned because there is an existing system by transport that do more, and that has been adopted instead. And then two information management systems and the portfolio donor management system are the two other projects that have not progressed and is considered as withdrawn because there was the supply chain hiccup. All of the other projects, which include the green ICT research as well as the green ICT implementation and accessibility to everybody in the organization to ICT, those projects have all been mostly achieved and will be achieved towards the end of the year. So the major issues is the information management system around the donor portfolio, donor projects management system, as well as the environmental system knowledge management system implementation. And then, as I said, the other one has been totally withdrawn. So those are new projects, but the NEC overall is well, it's functioning well. We've been given very good audit reports on our improvement of security. We are meeting the targets for the governance in terms of PSA. And here we are generally very ICT reliant on our businesses generally as an organization. So the new product is just the issue in this.
I think we should all of us agree with you that indeed you are doing quite well here, and obviously the year is not over yet, so we should be seeing some more greens by the fourth quarter. The mere fact that you have already met 7% of your targets and that 1% are in progress says a lot. So we should. But it is still to help your overall work. We have looked at your annual reports and your work with the Auditor General, so we are quite familiar with that as a portfolio committee. So this then confirms that you are one of those departments that we can be proud of in this program. One, we are still going to other programs. Program two.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. Program two is great, so there is nothing to talk about. I think that I can just say that we've met all our targets in quarter three from program two, which is legal authorizations, compliance and enforcement. And yes, so I don't know that you want to ask any question on whether I should move to program three. Yes. So yes, this is what when we appeared last week to the committee, we then said part of the presentation covered aspects of that strategy, and we even proposed that maybe the honourable members would want to get a presentation on the full strategy.
let's agree that we will market that presentation. Because we're saying, yes, we have a full strategy in place now that speaks to the safety and security of rhino population. And I think it's only fair if we have that strategy to agree members that we should have that strategy. That you have it, I think is good. We appreciate that you have it. But you know, there's in the taste is in the eating. Between you and me, have we seen reductions? Because it's nice and good, you know, to have this very voluminous, wonderful judgments and approaches, but what will then speak to us as members? Are we seeing decrease in the poaching and killing of our rhinos now? And obviously, I don't have the figures at this point in time, but you can speak generally that emanating from the strategy and all elements of the strategy, you'll come here to us and to them. But are we winning the war?
Well, remember, it's a difficult question for me and I think for the department and the sector. Put differently though, if we did not have any of these actions that we've had, what would be the level of loss is what I think gives me an indication that there is a little bit, even if they don't see the reduction in the case, but we probably would have triple or quadruple the numbers that we have now. Taking from the level of investment that we've made as a department, both in terms of triple, we used to have, I mean, we had the whole strategy to up our rangers with about 800 in numbers, compared to what we used to have even in Kruger. So we've added our numbers of rangers. We have at least some cooperation arrangements, even if they're not giving us the level of results that we expect. And our elements of the whole conservation strategy, we hope that with the translocation we are going to at least continue to have to save the population a little, that there is more of a breeding that would take place to make sure that we still have enough animals in the wild. So the counter for me is what we need to strengthen more and make sure that if we don't have 100% control on making sure that the village stop poaching even one rhino, then the least that we can do is to focus on how we grow the numbers of rhinos. And that is the conservation function that at least we can be measured on. But on the criminality of the whole thing, it's difficult to say that we have reduced the poaching of rhino. It's not reduced in terms of numbers. The numbers are growing. The killing and poaching statistics show that it's growing.
I've got a similar question too. You know, on the poaching and killing rhinos as priority, and then what follows is the criminal investigation, finalized a double set over prosecution. You know, any more information on that? Because, you know, criminal and corruption, that's vital to the running of the country. And if we could have more information on the investigation, and what always concerns me is that you can have these criminal investigations and things hand over to the prosecutor, but at the end of the day, what are the convictions? The convictions is vitally important. Is there any further information that we can be briefed on regarding that?
I'm trying to reconcile the information in terms of the strategy and what we've been
given, because my understanding is that when you put in place all these precautionary measures, defensive mechanism, protective, all of those good strategies, I think with the sole intention of making sure that the rhino poaching does not become hard, but we reduce the number. Now, I'm a little bit struggling, because maybe that it's only now we're putting in place all of these strategies that the Director General has actually briefed us about. Because that's something I'm feeling, was the whole intention is to make sure that we deal with the situation that the high number of rhinos that have been pushed by criminals. Now, I'm trying to understand, is the strategy only coming surface now, or what is actually happening the French chair?
Thank you very much, Chair. I think that what we at the committee need to understand is that the Department of Environmental Affairs can only do so much with regards to the scourge of rhino poaching. And I do believe that the Department of Environmental Affairs has introduced a number of brilliant interventions, and they've worked hard to do what they can within the ambit of their responsibility that they can. What is preventing a reduction in rhino poaching incidents is the porous border between ourselves and Mozambique and the Kruger National Park, the poor crime and incidence correlation, the poor arrest and conviction rates. Because if one, like my honourable colleague Bonhomme said, you know, how many incidents are there? And there were over 5,000 incidents in the Kruger National Park alone last year, and according to a Kruger National Park spokesperson. So that is how many that they know of insurgencies that went into Kruger National Park that either were successful or unsuccessful in a poaching incident. Of that, how many arrests took place? Probably in the region of 200, 300 around there. So that huge gap between an actual poaching attempt and an actual conviction is only about 4%. And unfortunately, just the ministries of justice, police, and defence do not, you know, those responsibilities are not the responsibility of the Department of Environmental Affairs. But perhaps, Chair, we need to discuss a way that we can get more success, because we know that the constitutional right to preserve an environment for future generations, the buck ultimately stops with the Department of Environmental Affairs. But how do we as a committee assist the department, whose perhaps hands are tied in certain areas? Perhaps they can enlighten us how we can assist. Thank you.
I think personally I'm looking forward to the day we'll be dealing with the strategy itself and how we have this and so on. Perhaps we'll be able to identify the threats and possibly see whether the strategy is seamless or not. So for now, it may be very difficult to raise this. But just a slight issue on the training of the environmental monitors, the 1,100 environmental monitors who have been trained and deployed. My interest in that regard will be, how long did this training take? Because you see, we're dealing with people who are venturing in a difficult terrain. So it does have to take into consideration that their training cannot just be a fresher course and so on. It must be a real training that has to go into that program, so that when you deploy them in a very dangerous area like that, you know that they'll be equal to the task and not just risk the lives of these monitors. Thank you.
I think we agree that the issues that you have raised with the department can reflect on that, but they will be more appropriately dealt with when we get to the strategy. To discuss these matters outside of the strategy might not help. So when we get that strategy, indeed there might be these gaps. What is the coordination? You are right, I don't remember. What is the coordination, level of coordination arising in the strategy with all the other players? So it's something that we can look at in that sense. So that you arrive at that, I think ourselves as a portfolio committee, if there is a need for us to meet the portfolio committee on home affairs, by all means. If there is a need for us to meet with the portfolio committee on intelligence, by all means. Portfolio committee on police, by all means. So that, I think that would be the best way of assisting the department. But we have raised this question because when these rhinos are killed, everybody looks at Minister Mulewa. Everybody, including us. What are you doing, Jim? That's what we say. And we agree that we must then get others to come. Even if it means we ask all these ministers and portfolio committees to come. All these portfolio committees, ask all these other ministers, are they committed to their work in this fight? More broadly speaking, can we see in the evidence that they are committed? And what is the evidence? But indeed, we will be able to speak to that after we have been given the strategy, briefed on the strategy. But you know, it's not an easy thing, is it? By the way, before you even answer, on the training, again, it would be good just for us at some stage, just to get to the essence of the training. Because again, our Green Scorpions deal with so many issues. So many issues. We're dealing with air pollution hotspots. It might be on the agenda very soon. What capacity do we build to our people to desist with these matters that arise from the constitution, that our people must be protected from harmfulness of the pollution so that their well-being is protected and the well-being of the environment? Who are our food soldiers in this regard? Are they properly trained? Can we rely on them? And the instruments that we use, the monitoring, indeed we have got state-of-the-art monitors. But those monitors without people, might as well, we will lose this war. So therefore, the question raised is also very important in that regard. Did you?
Thank you, honorable members. Firstly, I think that the strategy is a revised strategy. We've always had a strategy. So we've been upping elements, adding elements, and when we present you, we can say what is different from the previous strategy. With the Eastern Bay strategy. We even now, from a conservation point of where we have controls, we're talking about these extensive protection zones where we want to make sure that the technologies, because again, even technologies, there's links to available technologies in terms of what we can do. So if we defined a particular zone in Kruger, which we then say is an extensive protection zone where we invest as much as possible, even in terms of equipment, and then know that at least that population of rhinos is fully protected, whilst the other, because the Kruger itself is talking about wide area, it's another province, another country, per se. So it's difficult to police and contain the poachers from entering the park completely. So there are those elements that have changed. And we presented last week, we were talking about some of the legal elements, legislative elements, where we introduced the moratorium on the loose horn. In South Africa, a loose horn was traded in Canaan. Again, you can't have, the reason why the minister placed the moratorium basically is that who is the buyer of that loose horn? Because there is nobody internationally that has raised a hand, because in terms of CITES regulations, you need a trading partner, and those should be formally confirmed. We don't have a trading partner in respect of the horn. So where was that loose horn going? And there were difficulties in the department being able, and even the other authorities, for them to monitor where that loose horn goes. Trophies, I mean, even when you talk about trophy hunts, where the trophies are allowed. The those trophies are supposed to be the person that had, like the hunter and registered, whenever inspections can be done in their properties. But we've even found that it's difficult to actually trace even some of the trophies, whether the horn is still there and others have put a plastic horn or the real horn possibly and so on. So there are elements of what has been improved, and I think that when we present the strategy, we'll be able to talk to those elements, including coordination and so on. But definitely there is a role of Parliament, even in terms of coordination, that is not there, which I think could assist in many other ways. The conviction for last financial year, we had Ishan is going to come in and talk to the issue of the number of convictions, and two, I think the training of the environmental management inspectors, formalize this basic training, which can change, but Ishan can also indicate how they progress to advanced training and so on and so on. And that also includes our rangers. So even over and above the inspectorate that we use for other functions, the same training is provided to rangers that are working in national parks and even provincial parks. Isham, can you please?
Okay, thanks, Didi. Just in terms of the training, Didi did mention that there's a 3-week basic training course for your EMIs. There's different grades of EMIs. So you get your ranges, which are your grade 5 EMIs. Obviously, their training is a lot less sophisticated than the grade 2 or grade 1 EMIs because their functions are slightly different. Then, obviously, there's specialized training also for some of the EMIs in terms of, for example, if there are situations where there's violence and that kind of thing, so or there's a crime scene that needs to be managed. Certain EMIs need to manage the crime scene in a specific manner so that evidence doesn't get lost and that kind of thing. But it is actually quite a process, it's a very intensive process of training because you've got to take them through a whole range of issues from practical on-the-ground issues like crime scene management to legislation issues to ensure that evidence is collected properly, so that they can understand what they can and can't do in terms of the various pieces of legislation. We'll take them through virtually every specific environmental management act and potential criminal offences in relation to that. So there's quite a bit of complexity to the training. Then in terms of the dockets themselves, and we also do that training for the South African Police Services as a matter of course. So it's not only our EMI that we train, we also train the SAPS in terms of crime scene management when it comes to wildlife crime specifically, because it's different from a normal murder or rape or whatever the case is. So just to bear that in mind as well. Honourable Bonnie, you asked about the statistics. Just briefly, in terms of the number of dockets that we had in the 2013-14 year, there was a 25% increase in the number of dockets. We had 1,862 dockets that were registered. We sent almost 41% more dockets in 2013-14 year than the previous year to the NPA. The number of dockets actually was 379. The number of convictions, as you mentioned, in terms of the general pollution and other environmental crimes, 78 in that year as well. In terms of the sort of rhino-related prosecutions for 2013-2014, just in terms of the number of cases finalized, 2013 we had 50, 2014 we had 70. We had 140 accused involved in 2014 in the rhino-related cases, and there was 95 in the 2013 year. In terms of the number of convictions, 2014 we had 85, we had 13 acquittals, cases were withdrawn against 25 people. There were 20 that were sentenced, convicted and sentenced to a fine, and then number of accused convicted and sentenced to direct imprisonment without the option of a fine, we had 50 in 2014. Possession of rhino horns, we had 9 people in 2014. Illegal hunting of rhinos, 24. Illegal possession of firearms and ammunition and supplying firearms, we had 32 cases there. And trespassing, we had 44.
I think, honourable members, we can then make that information in writing available to yourselves so that you can then look at that, the statistics. And finally, I think, still on training, the department, again, the first thing that if we did not have any of these interventions, maybe we would have even had a worse situation. We have training that's provided even for prosecutors. We've provided magistrates even bench books that at least attempt to help them understand better how they handle environmental crimes. So we have MOUs and agreements with the prosecution, what is magistrate, I don't know the language now, when you cluster them. And we have those agreements with them in terms of how we then handle and process. And our EMIs help with the whole compilation of information and then submit and give them the justice factor to then proceed with the cases. So if we do not even have the capacity from and those inputs, I'm sure that we would not even have the levels of convictions that we currently see. Can I then move on to Program 3, Honourable Chair?
Definitely. I think when you come to, so that we don't forget about it, when you come to present the strategy, if we can also, within the strategy, I think they've got also these MOUs with other departments, I think it will be reflected in the strategy. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Can we perhaps arrange another meeting similar to the one that we had last year, where we had a representative from the Hawks, from the police, from the defense? So if there are questions, correct. So if we have a question related to that, then we can deal with it there and then. I take guidance from you, sir.
Okay, we will work at the logistics of that meeting.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, Program 3 is the work of the Oceans and Coast. The last one was Isham Abada, the DDG responsible for legal authorizations and enforcement.
Minister, we did get your apology.
Okay, on the Oceans and Coast, the priority shows the digital that will then fill in the details if there are questions the honourable member want to raise. Just to indicate that we have one, the one that is work in progress and not achieved in quarter three, here we're talking about the ocean management policy developed. We have an ocean policy that has been approved by Cabinet, and now we are talking about the implementation of that policy. And there have been delays related to the start of that work. And basically, there are elements that relate to moving forward with legislation and a law, an ocean law. There are other elements that relate to the conservation and also other elements that relate to the coordination with other departments. And that is delayed. However, we will reach the target of quarter four. And then the other targets have been met. In respect of the percentage coastline with formal protection, we have one that is amber and the other is red. In respect of the increase of the EZ. The coastline protection, we're talking about a marine protected area in Ado, which is on the Eastern Cape. There have been delays in gazetting the marine protected area following minister's meeting with the Minister of Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, basically in relation to some of the fisheries related issues. When you declare marine protected area, there are issues about access for communities in terms of take zones versus no take zones. So those are outlined, and the minister just wanted to conclude that process, and therefore this marine protected area will be gazetted before the end of the financial year, so we'll meet the target. Then the there is a further increase of the total event under protection. We're talking about the area of the high seas, in the area of Prince Edward Islands, already the minister has declared the marine protected area there. However, we're supposed to sign a monitoring plan with France, between France and South Africa, and there has been delays in concluding that agreement in respect of that monitoring plan. Hopefully we'll catch up. I'm not sure Dr. Maiki can confirm whether it may be amber by end of the financial year or it will it be green. He will come in and confirm that in terms of the action plan that is put in place. And then the next slide, honourable members, reflects the number of interventions that are aimed at advancing biodiversity science policy interface. And we're supposed to have a report on the extent of MON810, that's Monsanto 810, insect resistant report. It was due in by end of November last year, so the reason why it is yellow is because we did not meet the target. This is an area of genetically modified organisms. Honourable members, I don't know, we did not make a full presentation in terms of that subject matter under the biodiversity management. We have guidelines and regulations that dovetail the whole process that's led by the Department of Agriculture in respect of issuing authorizations for different types of GMOs. Now, this particular GMO, we're talking about a GMO that is related to maize production, GMO maize, and there has been an information that outlines that there is an insect resistant strain, and we needed to run an independent process to analyze that and therefore have a report. So that is more, that Monsanto 810 is code name for insect resistance on GMO maize. There was a delay because the consultant needed to further consult and collate data, and in November I think the climatic conditions are not allowing them to do that, therefore there's been a delay of 2 months, but they will finalize the study before the end of the financial year. Then in respect of risk analysis for intensive breeding in the wildlife sector, we're supposed to produce a predator control study. This is an area where we were delayed due to procurement processes. In the department, for the first time we've had many, even in program one, I've indicated that the procurement delays because the Auditor General has been making us to worry too much about how we tighten some of the other processes, and that is resulting in other unintended delays. The CFO, as she presents, we will then talk about how we are trying to improve on the procurement cycle so that we reduce and minimize delays. Then the one indicator on the observation platforms that contribute to ocean and coastal observations monitoring network. We have there again working progress due to delays in servicing the observation platforms themselves. So we first service and then get to redeploy, and therefore the redeployment could not happen before the servicing was concluded, and that is the basis for the delays. And then lastly, on the multidisciplinary processes that relate to ecosystem studies that needed to be undertaken, there was a cruise that needed to be undertaken in the Benguela Agulhas Current, and that was initiated late in the process, and Dr. Maiko can further explain to us. Okay. You want to come in? I'm done. So basically, we have achieved 8% of the targets, which is out of the 22 targets, 15 was achieved, and 6 is making progress, and 1 is off target.
what does the doctor, the good doctor Ramsey, where would you be on this third quarter in terms of the percentages of achievement that we have? What would we be looking at this third quarter time of the year? Would we be looking at 68, or would we be looking at more or have we done better than what would have expected on the third quarter?
Thank you, Chair. And I also wanted to ask that, noting that the Department of Environmental Affairs has been called on by the President to lead Operation Akisa, does Operation Akisa fall within the Ocean and Coast program? And I just wanted to find out what preparation around the Operation Akisa are we doing? So what are the programs that are being implemented and where are they currently? I just want to, because there hasn't been any mention of that, and I know the President said he was leader, how are we doing that? Thank you.
You can speak, who's away, Doctor?
Thank you, Chair. I will start off by addressing the issue of peer review publications that DG alluded to, that on which we have not met our target. He also intimated that we would meet our target at the end of the year. It is just that the nature of process of delivering a publication is difficult to work out in terms of quarters. But even though we may not have achieved what we're supposed to achieve in the third quarter, because of the way the publications are done, we submit, it gets reviewed, it gets accepted, then we say you have achieved the publication. It doesn't work according to quarters, but we are confident that by the end of the year we will have achieved the 18 peer review publications that we committed to have. Then, in terms of where Prince Edward Island, the agreement with the French chair, we are, even with this one, confident that we will be able to achieve this target. Just to give an indication of what caused the delay, there has to be an agreement between South Africa and France on exactly how they are going to monitor the ESS 5 days away from here by ship. Now, the sticky part was whether the French can get into South African EEZ in pursuing illegal people who are being things illegal. And that, of course, has to be dealt with in South Africa, not only by the Department of Environment Affairs, but the Department of DEPCO, Department of International Affairs, has to be dealt with also together with the Defense South African Defense. And that has caused delays and has caused us to revise the letter of intent with the first, so that it doesn't get into those controversial areas of who can get into whose territorial waters.
Doctor, you are protected by the chair. Continue.
I would like to defer to the Director General the state of readiness of the department to participate in the practice.
Actually, responding to that, honourable members, and I think the minister is going to be also requested further on. Honourable members, Operation Pakisa was done in the middle of the financial year. So basically all of those activities now are included in Outcome 10, the report of the department, and therefore in the new APT, which is the annual plan that will be tabled in Parliament, which will be a reflection of that. We are leading the ocean governments and protection services
And when we think that there are projects or initiatives that relate to the expansion of marine protected areas, there is the establishment of an integrated information system and coordination of enforcement and so on and so on. So we can have a separate presentation again to the committee in that regard. And over and above that, the minister then, in respect of the overall Patricia, she was the champion and leading the working with the presidency, the minister in the presidency, in terms of the four areas, which is marine transport and manufacturing, oil and gas, and as well as aquaculture, both marine and freshwater aquaculture, and then the fourth one being the governance and environmental protection in as a focus area. So that is what I can say in summary in that regard. Thank you.
My colleague, the minister.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I know that you have put this on record, but also from myself, just to apologize for this late arrival. I started in Johannesburg at two other engagements this morning. But just to add on this Operation Pakisa, ocean economy, I just need to say that we had been asked, just a bit of this to say, if you mind, we had been asked to, by cabinet, to investigate the potential economic spin-offs and development in the space of oceans. Why is it that way? As we understand it is that this also came as a result of a discussion on oceans policy that we able to before carry out some two and a half years ago. And therefore, based on that, the cabinet then said, go and investigate this potential. We then came back to deal with the certain deputy in cabinet until all the processes are folded that I'm not going to bore you with that took place. Literally meaning that, as honorable members through yourself share with the call, that last year the president then made an announcement in the last year's SOLA that the work would be led by GIA. We do have dual roles, in short. The first role is to be a coordinator with the bigger picture at presidency level, a coordinator of the four areas, but we also have a role to play as GGS indicators in the actual implementation of the fourth pillar, which is that of governance and protection services. There we shall work with science and technology, some elements of security, not the entire bigger picture of security, because it's kept in the security platform that way, where it contains constant issues of illegal fishing, illegal whatever work that's happening, all other resources that are probably being, how they need to manage. So our role, therefore, is just to manage the entire space of the oceans economy, the oceans in particular. So it really is a task that came as a result of that work. This year, as honorable members may recall, there has been an announcement through the budget of Operation Pakisa Oceans Economy. And therefore, the actual true implementation will start from this financial year. And just to emphasize what DG says, as you will be looking at a threat plan, which is due to be tabled today in Parliament, you will then see that element going on. That kind of coordination. However, we must emphasize that in the four areas of work that we're doing, the departments that are related, relevant departments, will still need to carry through the work. Let's do it, for instance, manufacturing of shipbuilding program, what do they call this, rig repair, oil and rig repairs, and so forth. Infrastructure expansion along our ports will actually be done by implemented by departments. We're just looking at the integration aspect, because we may go ahead with business as usual. This is a different project, because at planning level, we were working together. At execution level, we must continue to execute together. So our role is to ensure that that's where this is done. As you can see, as why I'm emphasizing ocean economy, is because at all times when we think about Hagisa, Operation Hagisa, we need to keep in mind that Operation Hagisa is actually a model of big after results delivery. And using that model, we'll move into different categories. And the ocean economy was one, the first one. The second one, as Brendan indicated, is on health. And there are plans, other operation practices in the mining sector, beneficiation, and so forth, in the agriculture. APEC, agricultural APEC, that's plans. So those will unfold. In a nutshell, that's the role we are playing of coordination. May I just add that if you look at where we have still some red and probably a number of embers, is where the clear exogenous factors involved as well. I think we need to keep that in mind. Because with the French, for instance, the discussion with the French, it's not something that we ourselves have full control on as a pattern. So we will continue to work with the GERCO and defense as well as, as a team, negotiating and discussing those issues with them. If it were here in South Africa, I'm sure we'd be on tomorrow and discuss and deal with it and finalize it. But it has to do with another country, I share. Not that it's supposed to delay if it is with another country, but the fact that this matter is carrying these complexities as well does also say we should really go ahead and ensure that for the sake of ourselves, the national interest is actually also relaxed.
Sure. Lastly, just on the earlier I had a question that I should come back on program one. I was asked to break down for disabilities. That non-managers, that is levels 4 to 8, there is 24 staff members that are classified in the category of people with disabilities. Out of that 24, 16 is females. And in middle management, that is assistant director level and deputy director level. ASP, we have 9, that is assistant director, deputy director, we have 11, so we have 20 in middle management. And out of that 20, 10 is females. At senior management level, that is from director to DT level, we have 2 people with disabilities, and one of them is female. And then lastly, on bursaries, we awarded 49 part-time bursaries. Our target was 40. And then we awarded 35 external bursaries. Our target was 30. So that is now the final statistics for a month. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. I just want to ask the doctor and all the DG, in light of what you have explained, the French dynamic and so forth, does it mean that, I know there are a lot of treaties, but does it mean in concrete terms there are no global rules to protect and monitor ocean biodiversity in areas beyond the national jurisdiction? That's the first one. The second one that is interrelated is that what I don't get here is there a global ocean governance regime under the UN or whatever? Then that clarifies some of the things, especially in provinces that are surrounded by other countries. Yeah.
I'll respond to that, but I think we are in agreement that the minister will come just so that we just zoom on Turkish and our responsibility on ocean economy. So that we then deal with what is our responsibility in that area. And of course it will arise from your plans that you're delivering today. And therefore, as a matter of course, we'll then engage in those matters. brother or anyone who wants to tell them.
Actually, in response to the question from Honorable Marino, there is indeed a global arrangement for management of oceans globally. That is the Law of the Sea of 1982. And the Law of the Sea of 1982 allows countries to manage what is in their 200 miles away. But it's only what is in their 200 miles away, which leaves out 60% of the oceans, which is what is called high seas. In other words, the seas outside the 200 miles of coastal seas. Currently, there is no international regime that covers or that manages that part of the ocean. But it is an area of work that the United Nations is working on, and there has been an agreement that there be a supplementary agreement that is signed, which would then bolster that witness with the current law of the sea.
If I may, just I think Dr. omitted to speak about two other work that we do, no, not two, several other areas where we co-manage the oceans, which is that's the rare parity that you mentioned, through those other entities, no, I can think. Benguela Current and the Indian Ocean, and Nagala. We also had, by the way, Abidjan Convention, where we worked together on the coastal lines up to the tip of Africa, that's much more on the weather. And I think that it's important just to say that that on this matter of the high seas, we are led by the DERCO, Department of International Relations. They do convene and coordinate the high seas issues. That's the level of the laws of the high seas. We have in the honorable membership, if you could, when you discuss this, of course, we'll elaborate much on that. There is an outcome of Rio Plus 20 that deals with this matter. It's law of seas. It's called what? United Nations Law of Seas. What? UNCLOS. UN something and then close. Now, the reality is that nations of the world need to get together and decide on how we manage our oceans beyond the 200 nautical miles where we are managing as countries, and in the case of South Africa as well. And it has not been a very fast process, quite slow, quite sometimes a bit depressing. When we left to plus 20, the decision on that was saying something like we will endeavor to try and work on an ongoing basis. You see, when you have using waves of that nature, one after the other, you don't quite know in the final analysis what's going to happen. But we have successfully been informed that the UN Secretary General has actually appointed a team of men and women. One of the people who work for serving that team was Minister Manuel. And at the meeting of the Soil and Parks in Australia, they have at a side event collating information and working with the people towards giving the SG a report. Because remember, if a decision is taken at UN level at a meeting like Rio Plus 20, the SG puts his eyes on a radar screen through the institutions to work on ensuring that there is realization of achievement in that which has been decided, even as it may have sounded a bit depressing, but at least there are those that are now being followed and worked on. There are security issues that are in the space quite so, and I think as colleagues would know and may be realizing that there is a lot of poaching happening there, of abalone, there's a lot of so joint operations at Pakistan Ocean's economy level will help us with this, but it will not help beyond the high seas until those laws that were in place. That's for now. Thank you.
So thank you very much, Father. I think, again, let's appreciate, in fact, I ask a question. We might not have necessarily in our strategy, or not in our plans, annual plans, we might not have said what percentage of the plans should have been implemented by the third quarter. Now we are reporting that we are at 68, well done. And the 21 work in progress, 5% where we need to up our socks and our activism. Now, why I was asking that question is just to see overall the good doctor. Well, I've never seen a better overall. When we say 68, is that what we had planned at the time of the third quarter? 68 on green, having implemented. Because obviously, the nature of our work, and we have spoken to some of the things that cannot just happen on quarter to quarter. Some of the work, obviously, we try to say yes, by third quarter would be here, but we know very well that it might not necessarily fall in the third quarter, but by the end of the year, of the financial year, we would like to see evidence. Some of us are evidence-based ones, evidence, scientific evidence basis to make conclusions. Now, by the end of the year, you can say, yes, we were looking at 100%. But what were we looking at by the third quarter? Were we looking at 80%? We were looking at in this program. In this program. Thank you. If you had not thought about it, if I were asking you, you have it in your report, that you are at 68, was that what you had planned to be at 68%?
Can I just cover that in one line? All things being equal, let us forever. The third quarter is expected to be at 75%. It's 25, 25, 25, 25, that makes 100% on a straight line. But straight line, the difference is 2 plus 5 to get to that 75. And the 21 actions that we have set and will be achieved with the 5 steps to be pushed. If we, because there's very little left, I think, in terms of 27. May I also say, by the way, some of the things here that are still ember. In this past week, we've actually been completing some of those, just in this past week. So the 27, if we had come here a week later, that 75 would have been here, you know, on a straight line. Okay. Thank you.
You don't understand why this question. So that at the back of your mind, I know that, of course, if you divide 100 by... Well, then of course you are at 25, 25, 25. Then on a straight line. Now life at times doesn't work that way. That's why some of us who are married, it doesn't work that way. So but I think the essence of the question is that come end of the financial year would have met. Looking at where we are now. Come end of the financial year would have met all our targets, except those that we might have no control over. But all those that we have control over, there is no reason why, even in this program, Doctor, there's no reason why we would not have met, including on those 18 publications. Yes. Those are in our control. Whatever we say about procurement, you see, again, we must not hide behind procurement. DG. We must not hide behind procurement. Because it's us who must start the procurement activities early so that they don't impact negatively to our targets. Now we are sitting out there, these people who are dealing with the bees and whatnot. At the end of the day, in your plans,
you must also effect how do our bidding process impact on the land, so that it doesn't become an excuse. But we are just raising it in passing because we're doing well, by the way. We are doing well. But when we get to another department, another program, when you say procurement processes, before you say it. I think we're done, colleagues, are we done on this program? We then proceed to climate change, and you remember, colleagues, that we are doing this to assist ourselves as well as we get your annual report. Because you are going to give us, you have an obligation by law to tell the entire country how far did you go in meeting. So we'll get that in your annual report, and also the Auditor General will make his comments. But from where we are seated now, again, even in this program, it speaks to what we have come to know you to be. You are a working department. And I'm not only saying this because I'm in the chair. I'm saying this because even whatever presentations you bring to us, you are well prepared for those presentations, and you also get people that are knowledgeable to come and present before us. So you have the necessary capacity, and of course, added to that, you have a minister who is so passionate about the matters of the environment, and she even decides to work in Parliament. The way she's passionate. She wears green, then say, why are you not wearing green? She asked me. Because I sit just behind her. But that was only a lifetime. But it shows how much committed we are on this work that we are inundated by people of our country to do. And therefore, how much we do to ensure that we have the necessary capacity and administrative systems to ensure that we do the work that we are expected to do. That then takes us to, again, well done, Jordan. Well done. We hope come the last quarter, you won't have a 5% target that has not been met, and 21% that are still in progress. Hopefully we'll have a green tie when we come back, daughter. But there is no reason from where we are seated why we should not, except in instances where it is just beyond our control. Program 4, climate change and equality.
I'm not sure requesting people to come in and take us to the presentation. Thank you, PT, and thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. On Program 4, we will start on the first yellow. If we start there, we'll end by around long-term adaptation scenarios. We were to print the Phase 2 reports for human settlements, looking at urban, rural, and coastal areas, and also look at the disaster management sectors. There was a delay in finalizing the disaster risk reduction reports, which then meant we could not publish the long-term adaptation scenarios on time, but we have caught up on this area of work. The Minister was indicating that some of the things, while we have not done by the third quarter, we've already caught up on that area of work. So the reports were just done, finalized late, which then meant we could not publish at that time. The next area that we have there is around sector adaptation plans, aligning those to our national climate change response policy. I think usually this is that area where I need to pinch myself when you start talking about appointment of technical experts that would do the work, and there were delays.
The finance and supply chain coordination is a center, but the branches themselves, the project owners, initiate the process. So the system does anticipate, but I think the Departmental Association Committee has been even much stricter this year than other years, sending back bids and at the expense of us meeting the target. So we do have that as a real challenge, but we will mitigate it much, much better next year.
I think that the question is, what do we do to ensure that the bid committee doesn't send things back? That is the question. Because that's why we're saying, it's a fault line within the various entities in the department. So it's something that we need to work on. It's good that we are there, but you cannot make it as a laudable excuse in this meeting. It can't be. Because it's something that you could have foreseen. You could have done things better. And we are not impeded with that. We must look at bid committee and tell them, hey, you are doing a good job. Thank you.
Thank you. The next area is where we're planning to have a draft national carbon sinks atlas, which is around mitigation potential impact studies that we're doing, climate change. And the challenge that we've had here was this project was going to be funded through a UK fund, and unfortunately the funding was delayed by almost a year, and we had to secure another source of funding from Germany, and there has then been delays in terms of contractual agreements on doing that work. And we're doing that work in collaboration with CSIR as well. So there is a finalization of the contract at the moment, and chances are by the end of the financial year, this is one target that will still be done by and not fully achieved. Next slide. On the next slide, the target there for us was to have guidelines for mitigation plans that are aligned to the National Climate Change Response Policy. We could not finalize those as they also dependent on the carbon budgets, some elements of the carbon budget needed to be clarified. And as soon as those are clarified, we need that we can then conclude the guidelines document. Okay. The next slide, so if you move on that, we have a target here, Chair, as part of our air quality monitoring priority to ensure that we have as many stations in different areas of the country reporting on the national South African air quality information system so that we're able to track the air quality across the country. And there are some stations that are still not reporting on the system, which then would impact on our ability to gather data from those different areas. And in that quarter, we needed to focus on the South Anabe district and municipality to ensure that all stations that they have a report on South African Air Quality Station, and there are also six stations in Northwest that needed to be added into that list. There were consultation processes that were underway and were not finalized by the end of the quarter. In terms of the emissions offset policy, which we wanted to publish, there was a revisiting of that decision, which suggested that we should not publish a policy, but rather look at a guideline. This then came after a consultation process, where they said we were then requested to look at publishing a guideline as opposed to the policy. So in this area, it's just been a refocus. On the priority, not necessarily that the priority was not met, and we will then meet, and we have amended our APP, annual performance plans, in line with that change in focus. So by the end of the financial year, we'll be on target in terms of that one. The other area, Chair, is on small-scale charcoal plants that we want to declare as controlled emitters. There were documents that were compiled on this, however, there was a need to have an internal discussion and further briefings with the minister on how that will fit into the broader set of air quality instruments that we already have in place so that we don't duplicate. So that's the area that's still a bit outstanding there. In terms of
air quality, two priority area air quality management plans for the valve in the high salt. Our challenges there in the main are around engagement with the multi-stakeholder reference group to understand the challenges and to come up with the mitigation plans on that. We had sessions that we had scheduled to go and consult with them, but those sessions were then postponed because the communities themselves indicated that they were not ready for the engagement. They wanted to have more information. So that was one that was in a way beyond our control because we had scheduled that, but it had to be then postponed. And it also then had an impact on the next target, which was then the publishing of the Waterberg Buranala Priority Area Air Quality Management Plan. And Chair, that is all in Program 4, which then meant in total 47% of the targets were met, 47 were work in progress, and we had one area where we said we totally off target, which is that area that we indicated that was pre-funded by the UK, and there were delays in getting that support fund.
I think Honourable Chair, Judy can add, especially around the complexity of the budget that leads to carbon budget, because it's a process of multiple stakeholder engagement, and more complexities of business readiness for the mitigation system, and Judy can just outline some of those challenges. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member. This is a very difficult area of work. We are in the process of developing and, in fact, have first drafts of three key documents. One is the design of carbon budgets. Two is a report on the set of instruments available in the different sectors and sub-sectors, whether they are financial instruments, regulatory instruments, or other, to reduce or enable industry to reduce emissions. And the third document is how do we set our desired emission reduction objectives per sector. Now, these documents are being consulted with business and industry and other stakeholders. We have, however, had, I think I can call it pushback in terms of how we approach the setting of carbon budgets and how carbon budgets relate to the other set of instruments within the mitigation system. So if we are designing a mitigation system, an emission reduction system, we need to set carbon budgets, we need pollution planned by industry, and we need mandatory reporting by industry. And the complexity relates to the who would be eligible for carbon budgets. The National Climate Change Response Policy indicates that any companies that are emitting over 0.1 megatons. The other complexity, of course, relates to the legal basis. And the further complexity relates to how these three instruments, the pollution plan, the carbon budget, and the reporting, fit and work together as a single system over 5-year periods. Of emission reduction. So this is a technical discussion that involves not only business and industry and other stakeholders, but also other departments. So it involves Department of Trade and Industry, Department of Economic Development, Department of Science and Technology, Department of Energy, obviously, is absolutely key in this. We were aiming to have these carbon budgets set by a draft set of carbon budget set by the end of March. At this stage, given the fact that we only have 2 weeks left and we still have extensive further discussion that is needed with stakeholders, it is unlikely that we are going to be able to meet the target. We are, however, proceeding apace with this work, including in bilateral engagements with government departments and other stakeholders, to to resolve the matter as fast as we can. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to find out, Chair, whether we can request that the National Environmental Compliance and Implementation Report for the current and preceding year can be circulated to members of the committee. And then just related to the presentation, the Air Quality Act, that guideline on offsets, when is the expected completion date? Seems you are in process. And we understand as a committee the challenges experienced with the high salt air quality management plan specifically. But you've got an aim to bring that whole area within compliance by 2020, which is in 5 years' time. I just want to know, what are your plans to get that process back on track? Because I know that there's a standoff between community and the department. How are your plans to get that thing on track this year? I also wanted to find out what has happened with the strategy to address air pollution in big low-income communities that was drafted in 2013. And then lastly, is there any program to publish the air emission licenses specifically with regards to individual companies and what they are licensed to emit? And I know that with licenses, with the issuing authorities often being municipalities and things like that, but correct me if I'm wrong, I suppose the Department of Environmental Affairs ultimately that needs to ensure air quality, ambient air quality. But you've got licensing and licenses are being granted, but how are you ensuring that A, that information is public, because it's public anyway when they have to apply for the license, they've got to apply for it due to a certain standard, but ensuring that the interest of openness and transparency, that everyone can see, maybe on the SACWIS website, Terry Sander Incorporated is allowed to emit 500 the unit of shops or whatever, and then there needs to be a compliance monitoring and reporting as well. So it's all very well issuing the licenses, but how are we monitoring and ensuring compliance with that with regards to air quality? I know it's a very fuzzy question. I hope that I've gotten my point across. Thank you, Chair.
Any other interventions? Shalom.
Yeah, well, Shalom. I just heard about the funding that has been delayed, and now there is a new funding from Germany, something like, in regard to the mitigation. Well, just to know what is going to happen with the delayed funding, and how much is that funding you're talking about, and how much is the funding from Germany that is promised to be available sooner than the one that is being delayed. Thank you.
So just for my own clarity, Judy, as we develop this mitigation and adaptation strategies, at the back of my mind is what is supposed to be the input of the international fund on this matter? Particularly to developing countries. Wouldn't our life be made easier if those funds were available and were being directed to these developing countries, as our political approach says, so that it eases the burden not only on government but also
on businesses in developing countries. That's one. The second issue would be on technologies that we would otherwise use. Because probably one of the enabling matters by the that are quite nearer to the heart of business in this regard to the how do we get technologies at a price that is reasonable. And I'm told now, I don't know, I'm told that the price at which these technologies are bought are quite high to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, are very, very high. Now, those might be two issues that might be bedeviling us, and indeed, they might not be in our hands. They are in the hands of the United Nations and the negotiations that will still take place elsewhere. Just your comment on it without going into detail. But if all instruments were in place that we were proposing as developing countries, will things be better in you doing this work that you are expected to do, your carbon budget, your reduction of emissions, et cetera, you name it?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I think just to start with the climate change issues, the question around international funds and availability and access, the Green Climate Fund is the international fund that South Africa has been very centrally involved in ensuring operationalization, and those funds will be available probably from, I'm told, from October this year. We've already had initial capitalization of about $10 billion, which was received into the Green Climate Fund in December.
$10 billion.
which was achieved at the Lima, at COP20 in Lima. South Africa also has access to the GES funding. We've had confirmation of $17 million from the five-year GES, what is called the GES 6 program. That's over a period of 5 years. And there are other sources of funding. So what we're doing is a discussion nationally with the key stakeholders and relevant government departments within the context of the climate change response flagship program to identify what the priority projects, impact, high impact and catalytic projects are to achieve either scale up or to achieve whatever needs to be done within a particular sector, building on what already exists for the transition to a lower carbon and climate resilient economy. In the case of GES funding, that's predominantly emission reduction, focused on emission reduction programs, but in the case of the Green Climate Fund, it's very much focused also on adaptation programs. So it's about having and packaging a set of national high-impact programs within which we can leverage different sources of finance, whether it's international finance, whether it's public finance, or whether it's private sector finance, to make sure that we have a set of national high-profile climate change response programs that are achieving the emission reduction and resilience that really is the basis of our transition. For our program specifically, for our Department of Environment and Climate Change Response Program, we are quite heavily reliant on donor funding, and that's because we're a new branch. And while we are slowly but surely increasing the extent to which we have access to government funding, we are still largely dependent on funding from donors such as the UK that is now being phased out. Germany, which is now offering us a third period funding, and others such as Norway and Sweden. And this funding is really used not for the purposes only of Department of Environment Affairs work, as champion of its climate change work, but really for the purposes of the national climate change response, and hence the importance of having a set of nationally supported high-impact and catalytic programs. The issue on technologies and access to climate change technology is absolutely critical. Chair, you will recall that last year we did the mitigation potential analysis, which identified those low-hanging emission reduction technologies that can most, at the lowest cost and with the greatest emission reduction achievements, can facilitate our transition. Now, what we've done is ask the Department of Science and Technology to pick those low-hanging technologies and plot for us what the status is in terms of either accessing or negotiating agreements with countries that have such technologies. And it's not only the low-hanging that we need to be focusing on. It's also those technologies that are going to really facilitate the biggest reduction over time, and we've plotted that over 2020, 2030, and 2050. So it's about not only negotiating those agreements, but it's also in the context of UNF, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, actually negotiating a good outcome through the Paris Agreement for developing countries to access technologies at the best possible rate. So it's both a national process and a national responsibility, but it is also an international process and part of the international negotiation. And certainly, in South Africa's intended nationally determined contribution, we will be indicating the extent to which we require access to certain technologies to facilitate our transition from a resilience and from an emission reduction perspective, because we are emphasizing both. Then there was the question, there were a number of air quality questions. There was the question on the office guideline that will be completed by the end of March. We are pushing for the last 2 weeks of analyzing that. In terms of the dense low income strategy, that was presented to social cluster, the DG social cluster last week. So this was one of those strategies that initially we had assessed that in view of the fact that it is really quite an operational strategy that requires involvement of Department of Human Settlements, Department of Energy, Department of Transport, that we needed to get agreement at Director General level. However, we have realized and have taken the consultation further that we actually need cabinet approval, and hence we have put it into system to go for cabinet approval, because it does have implications in terms of strategic planning for those departments, strategic planning and budgeting for those departments that, as we discussed last week, are really key to supporting the work of reducing emissions from the various sources in dense low-income settlements. The question of there was a set of questions around, was it the high fault priority area that the Minister was raising? In terms of both the high fault priority area and the Vaal priority area, I think as we discussed, I think it was last week that we discussed, the multiple different sources of emissions, whether it's industry, whether it's vehicle, whether it's mine dust, whether it's people making fires and using coal for cooking, etc. Each of those requires a different set of instruments and a different approach. The air quality management plan for each of those priority areas identifies the key actions that need to be taken, the key targets over for a particular year, over a period of 5 years. And the state of the air report gives us indication every year as to the extent to which you are winning or not winning. And I think I can really only answer that it's about keeping the pressure on for each of these targeted actions that are set out in the air quality management plan of both the Vaal priority area and the Hafao priority area. The question of licenses being public, to the extent that okay, there are two responses in this regard. The first issue relates to existing licenses. And to some extent, data is available on the South African Air Quality Information System. The other part of that question relates to how governments, because air quality licenses or licensing authorities are at national, provincial, and local level, how do we check the state of those licenses in terms of whether they are new licenses, whether they are renewals, whether they have postponement decisions that influence those licenses. And it's there where we are putting in place a permitting instrument. It's a web-based permitting instrument that will have all of the licenses uploaded and in which at a click of a switch we are able to access and understand the status of any particular license at any particular time. This is really critical in view of the fact that there are at least 1,000 facilities that are licensed. So this is it's not an insignificant number that we are trying to check. And at any one time, there are licenses that are either being renewed or being adjusted or new licenses that are being applied for. And it's absolutely critical for the department to be able to check these licenses very comprehensively at any particular time. Then there, I think the final question, Chair, it was the funding in relation to the delayed since ATIS. We had requested a total of $3 million from the UK government for this work. We've already done an assessment of the state of the South Africa since. Now, the typical thing about this since assessment South Africa, we call them greenhouse gas sinks. Now, those are the extent to which biomes or land can absorb greenhouse gas emissions, and the extent to which our different areas in the country are at the best possible state of restoration to maximize the potential for absorbing greenhouse gas emissions and identifying where action needs to be taken in combination and in synergy with other restoration, ecosystem restoration programs such as the Working for Water, the Working for Wetlands and even biodiversity ecosystem programs. The critical thing here, it is two elements of this care and the reason that it is so critical. A very unpredictable part of our greenhouse gas inventory, which is updated every year, is our understanding, our national understanding of the extent to which greenhouse gas emissions are absorbed by sinks. And so the more we can improve our understanding of this, the better we are able to be quite predictable and able to be much more specific about about the numbers in our greenhouse gas inventory. The second part of this is the point that I've raised already. What are the priority areas for restoration of our sinks? So this is an important piece of work. The assessment has actually been done. It's just the first part of this work. The second part of the work is to consolidate all of the work that is being done by a number of different players. There are many different pieces of work that need to be consolidated in the Things Active, and hence our urgent seeking for funding from whatever source we can find this money. Thank you, Chair.
The other question that the Honourable Member has raised was, when that money from the UK comes, we would still go to this project because, as I am now saying, there are so many elements that we need to look at in this project. Will it still come to this project?
Sure.
Well, I don't know whether I want to say how much the Germans have given us.
So, let me ask the first question, then the second question. The first question is that the UK funding has effectively closed. And so, in terms of the UK funding that National Thinks Atlas, we will not be able to get that funding. We have therefore put it on before the German funding program to request a reprioritization of some of the existing funds to direct it to the National Thinks assessment. We have not yet received confirmation of that. In terms of the next phase of program from the German government, we've not yet received a clear indication of how much that would be. Our current 3-year program is 35 million, and that is the money that has funded our long-term adaptation scenarios, our mitigation potential analysis, all of the work that is being done on the climate change response monitoring evaluation system, a lot of the work that was done in preparation for the National Climate Change Response Dialogue last year, and we'll also be facilitating further work this year in taking forward, for example, the climate change adaptation strategy and the work around establishing a mitigation system. So the current German tranche of funding concludes at the end of next year, and I must say we really appreciate this funding from the German Department of Environment, our counterpart, BMU is their acronym, and we also very much appreciate their willingness to fund climate change work going forward. It's an absolutely key source of funding.
Thank you very much. Just to I asked Judy Pike, and I'm sure she did hear that, to talk to the other process linkages with the carbon tax, the carbon budget, and the carbon tax. I think colleagues would recall that, honourable members would recall that there was an announcement made by a former Minister of Finance some 2 years ago on the implementation of a carbon tax. And it was subsequently not followed through a budget, but this year Minister of Finance also addressed this matter to indicate that the process of establishing and finalizing the carbon tax is going to be tabled this year, I think around June, or so the discussion document will then be followed. We have been working with the Department of Finance, Treasury in particular, regarding these two matters, because one of the reasons we think industry has been making the pushback, for lack of better words, we think could be linked with this particular issue. And industry has indicated that we are facing two separate regimes in the same government. One is the allocation of carbon budgets, because indeed there's an expectation that with this allocation of carbon budget, industry must then be certain things to move towards helping us to meet the standard and reduction of greenhouse gases, but also to look at the areas where we're talking air quality issues and so on and so on. Now, if there's evidence at another level there's a carbon tax, how will these two then work? Because it did sound to them as they indicated that it is like a bit of a squeeze over a period. So we then worked together to council, and within discussion with Treasury, the matter has now been finalized with regards to how we'll approach that, and I'm going to ask through the chair, once again, to add technically, because it's a highly technical issue, for Judy to explain how, maybe not today, especially because the document is coming from Treasury, that discussion document, but we have resolved this matter, it's important to say that, and therefore, having resolved it, when it gets tabled at the right time, you will see that there's marriage between the two set of instruments that we will be utilizing is not quite fully placed because upright checkthrough that's punishing. It is now built in such a manner that it's actually a carrot and a stick in a way. So therefore, the issue of ensuring that we work towards getting these instruments working, we are continuously negotiating with our private sector, those who, and even government partners about how we think that everything should work. The other question here that I thought that is important for us to understand, not to answer, is that Honourable Member Standard indicated that there is a need for a request, I think she made a request probably on behalf of the committee, that there should be national compliance reports tabled here. Now, last week we were tabling the compliance report on the inspectors, the green spokers. I think it's important to understand because we are a regulatory department. If we're talking everything that we deal with is compliance, so each ones are, it's important to understand that are we talking about the climate change related only? Because others were done last week, as I say. So just to indicate through you that we appreciate at the end of the meeting or even in the future to be clarified by the teams as to what exactly are we talking about. That's if the proposal is agreed to. I also think that it is important to embed the point about these technologies and very important issues in this chair. Our negotiations at international level at UNFCCC, it's not only UNFCCC by the way, whether we talk UNCCD, whether we talk CBD and so forth, we're talking technological innovation. And Judy has explained the role that you're playing at national and international level. But it's important to indicate once again to reiterate that we are also at the same time working on the INDCs, our own for submission to international. So that even come October or even post the Paris Agreement that's been implemented. Because remember there are three 2020 actions that we all need to take. Then we are ready, especially to access this transport from technology. Some for capacity building. We emphasize again that we work with the Africa group as well, and so it's important that we work, continue to link with them. South Africa is a chair of D77 plus China from this year. And therefore it's important that work that we do as developing countries, as you said, we are one of those, then gets implemented and gets recognized in terms of the expected funding that's coming. Thank you very much.
I think Judy did answer the question, just basically on those compliance, what are these people that we are licensing expected to adhere to, not necessarily the committee, but to put there for public knowledge, either in the website of the department or in the website of the relevant licensing authority. Basically that it was arranged for us to take reports on every entity that needs to comply to some legislation, but for that information to be readily available, I think that's what she was saying. But and when it comes to greenhouse gases and also the various other gases that might impact on the public health of public. But I got an understanding that in fact this is being done from you. That's the impression that I got.
Well, Chair, I think, just if I may come in here, I think that I had suggested two components of in response, but I think perhaps there is a third, and perhaps Ishan can come in here. So the two components would be access to some extent that information is available on the South African Air Quality Information System, but it is not all there. What we're doing is putting in place a web-based permitting system that enables us to access and understand the status of all atmospheric emission licenses at any one time, whether it's at a national, provincial, or a local level licensing authority. But then I think the third point relates to information on any compliance monitoring that is being done by the department, where there may be a reasonable belief that a company is not meeting
the conditions of its atmospheric emission license. So I think there was, I'm hearing the point that is being raised by Honourable Thunder in those three different contexts.
Can we, if we have time, I want us to finish the two programs that are remaining. Then we can come back to this so that we clarify our understanding. But can we finish this too? But you know, you are at 47% juice, 47. 47% green, 47% what is that kind of yellow. Now, are we lively? Of course, we have explained that the non, when some funds ride out from the UK, we could not undertake certain things. And of course, some of the targets are mostly reliant on the negotiations and discussions between ourselves and the sector, and the various sectors, on adaptation and mitigation measures, which will also impact on our INDCs, obviously. Come end of the year, where will we be? Where will we be? Are we likely to be 100, or where will we be with all these constraints? And of course, we have Paris to contend with.
Mm.
Whatever we do, we have Paris to contend with, and you also have a date with us, May. You have a date with us where you must say, where are we on these matters? How have we concluded the negotiations with the various sectors in the industry? With that as a background, where would we be come end of the year?
So thank you, Dave, for the background, because it does mean that it's a tough year ahead. But I think the reality is that we're going to come short in two of the targets, and that is we're unlikely to have done the National Think Atlas, and the other issue is that we will not manage to conclude on the final carbon budgeting work, which is a real a key area of our work. So we will not have been able to finalize on the design of the carbon budgets and the actual quantification of those carbon budgets. But that will be pushed forward as a priority for next year. So I think, Chair, to answer your question in numbers, we will have, we will have 80% green, and I think we will have between 12 and 20% red. Sure.
Well, fine. Work on it, because these are your targets, they are not our targets. And what I think the other element that might be a little bit worrying, that for our climate for us to implement our climate change response policy, we then rely on funding from other people. It's something that perhaps we need to look at. This reliance on other people to fund our climate response policy, climate change response policy. But we leave that in your capable hands. When we meet with you, we want 100% when we meet you at the end of the year. Because you see, the reality is we cannot be working now for 80%. And we can't join you in working for 80% achievements of the target. We are working towards 100%. Where to get the money, and because it's your program. It is your program. It's not a program of the German. It's not a program of the UK people. It's a program of the department. You have put it there in your annual plans. You didn't request some British to put this there. And you didn't even tell us how you're going to fund it, but you thought that you would fund it.
Chair, I'm a little bit colorblind. I used the wrong color. It's not red. It's yellow. So apologies, I used the wrong color. I am so obsessed with not getting red that I mentioned red. We are aiming for 100%, but I think we will have at least 12% yellow, Chair.
Good. At least we are getting somewhere. We are getting somewhere. Can we get to biodiversity? We have two programs remaining, biodiversity and environmental programs. But by the way, before you, there was something on air quality, but that's later, we'll discuss it after. Polina.
Thank you, Chen. On biodiversity and conservation, the first area where we are yellow amber on is around management of our protected areas. There is an assessment tool that we use, the management effectiveness tool, which normally we would use an independent institution to come and verify that all our state-owned protected areas are actually meeting the minimum standards for a well-managed state, which is around 67%. What we had planned to do was we wanted the audits to be finalized by the third quarter, the audits for all the state-managed protected areas. However, there were delays in confirming dates for audits in provinces, and hence we were amber there. The latest on that is that these audits have been conducted, and it looks like we are exceeding the target in that about 90% of our protected areas are meeting the standard, as opposed to 86% that we had targeted. In terms of the next area, which is around regulations for the registration and professional hunters, trainers, and hunting outfitters that we wanted to publish, we finalized the documentation in mid-November, and publishing in mid-November would mean the commenting period runs up until in December, which is the December holiday, and the feeling around that was that would then could lead to an unfair opportunity for public comments. So we then decided to delay the publishing to January. They were published in January. In February, we received all the comments, and we are finalizing the documentation. So that's the delay that happened there. Okay. The next area is, next slide is red. It's one that was totally off target, which was around regulations for threatened or protected species, or TOPS as we call them. There was a comprehensive public comment that we received after we published this, and these were in respect of the risk assessment and categorization of TOPS species. We then had to work through these inputs and republish for comment again, which would be, so there was a delay because there was this republishing that we had not anticipated in our plans. However, in the area, there was also a need to engage with the PAVAS, Department of Forestry, Fisheries, Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, regarding some welfare issues around canned hunting. And there have been engagements that we have done. We have a follow-up meeting with them tomorrow, scheduled for tomorrow, and there will be a ministerial meeting that is planned for March in finalization of that. In the next slide, the other area that we have is a yellow with around the norms and standards for management of protected areas. The delay that we have there were in the mix. The delays here were in regard to stakeholder consultation processes, which has been now finalized, and we will meet the target there. So that will be another green that will be adding. In the next area, which is around biodiversity management plans for species, we were targeting the African lion, the white rhino, and one for bearded vulture. The one for bearded vulture we did and we finalized. We had drafted by the end of the third quarter, we drafted biodiversity management plans for African lion and the white rhino. They were only finalized now in the first weeks of the fourth quarter, so that's why it would reflect as work in progress in the third quarter. But however, for now, we have finalized those. So it's another agreement that will be adding. and that will be all for biodiversity and conservation. At the end of the third quarter, they were at 83% of their target, 14 were work in progress, and one target on the top was the one that was off target, as I've indicated, going through these, even in the areas that were work in progress, we have processed them, and we are looking at gains at 20% share of 90.
No, thanks very much. I regret the explanation given in terms of the three quarters notional target met in that regard. I don't think the reasons given are plausible enough in terms of the delay. Because the fact of the matter is that on page 15, quarter 1, quarter 2, quarter 3. So that's my first take on the matter. But the targets are not met. And what is the implication in terms of our core mandate of preserving and conserving our biodiversity and our communities? The last one here will be on page 20, the last one, around the environmental authorization. What is the implication?
On page 15 as well, and you'll bear with me, I'm not juggling through the pages and so on, so that I know what was the actual plan or expectation to achieve. So my question will be that if by January they were published, I understand that they delayed the publishing in December. I think to me it's understandable. But then you ended up publishing in January. Now we are you're presenting today in March for that quarter. Why is it that it's remaining red? Is it because the expectation was that it was not just about publishing? Because if it was about publishing, then you said yellow or something or anything.
Honourable members,
thank you.
We're reporting as of the end of December. So progress now will be reported in this quarter. So we're showing you the report as it was end of December. Otherwise, we could have all cooked and updated all of this. So by that quarter, we did not reach the publishing. So it's published now. In the end of the year, it will then be different. Okay.
I think from where I'm seated, the only issue would be the tops issue. In this program, and you, but well, I think that the question is, what is the implication? Again, if we have reversed any negative implications on this, by all means, anyone to speak on it?
Thank you, Chair. On the threatened or protected species regulations, I think as articulated by Dimpo, we were delayed by the public participation process, which made significant submissions which we did not anticipate. Hence, we have had to republish again for public comment. And there were also some issues that we had to clarify with the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry. As you'll be aware that the Department of Environmental Affairs has no mandate on issues relating to welfare. But those engagements are currently underway, as indicated. We'll be having our final meeting tomorrow before the ministers meet before the end of the month. So from a risk perspective, we've really tried to facilitate the publication process, and we are working around the clock to ensure that those issues which we had experienced previously
are being addressed. So most of the comments, the inputs that we receive from the public participation process have been factored into the regulation. So we're hoping that when we republish, when we republish again, there will be less input. So it should facilitate our process then of final publication, which we anticipate will happen around June at the latest.
Okay, no, that's fine.
So it's more of a delay of about 3 months in terms of the finalization.
A delay.
Yes, Terry, absolutely.
In terms of your own annual plans, which you gave to us voluntarily, we didn't sit with you with a gun over your head. You came and said, this is our plan. Now, indeed, among other things, isn't it when we make this, I think they're teaching us what might happen in the future, particularly a public participation process. We must be a little bit more open to our timelines, because indeed people might make all sorts of inputs, which then makes us not to make our targeted times as anticipated. But with that as it may, we are still doing well. We are still doing well. We are sitting comfortably at 83% as at December. So we have no reason to doubt that you'll be able to turn around even that area. That's why you see, your excuse is a very lame excuse, as I said. To say that, you see, we've got so many. Oh, did you not anticipate that we'll get many inputs from our people on this matter? As you get many inputs and interventions by people of South Africa, obviously you should have had in your mind, somewhere down in your heart, that there might be a reason, a need to republish for comments. After you have taken on board the initial response of then factor that into your timelines. I think naturally that's how some of us will do things. That after you have published, you expect that people might force you to republish something that includes their own observations. Now, you cannot then say, it then disorganized us, that's why we are 3 months late. We should have defected that into the planning of our work. It's just like this one at DC, this year procurement.
The process, Chair, we're talking there about plans of managing 29 targets. And any delay, normally one does not anticipate that, for instance, the industry is going to decide that it's important to revisit certain issues, because it's a process where there is a back and forth. And you also expect that your key stakeholder, in this case, we have engagement with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. It's not an easy process. In that same department, there's been a number of changes, even in terms of the team that is working in this area that overlaps with us. So there has been, after reasonable care, there has been really limited abilities for the branch to completely meet the target. Because once you meet the target already in the second quarter, you will remain right until you have achieved everything above that target. That's also the fact. And secondly, honourable members, even with that earlier discussion of the UK funding for Judy's program, the Finks program, when in terms of the public service regulations and treasury guidelines, we are allowed to revise our plan mid-term, which is after the end of September. So we're presenting to you everything that was approved, that was tabled in Parliament, but the Minister has already approved some of the changes for those areas that are completely outside of our control, like the issue of the budget. But the Minister does not just approve that without a clear action plan. For instance, Judy was reporting that we have tried to reprioritize programming from the
the German findings. Hopefully, if that reclassification is agreed to by parties, because we are in a memorandum of agreement with the Germans, if it's not approved, we don't quite have another way until we are able to find other resources in the next financial year, not necessarily in this current financial year. So there are those kinds of issues that are not, which probably we should upfront process them with you, but we think that we haven't checked everything, because we don't make it easy for managers to rob a target. It has to be proved that there is no other way, either it was not defined correctly, and also the issue of funding. If one program is cost, when, in terms of when we table budgets and ATPs in Parliament, we table them with an estimated budget. Once you go through even the full procurement process, we've had instances where we have other projects costing more than what we anticipated when we were doing the plan. But I think we're getting better at it, and we're not, in terms of mitigating risks that we may have towards achieving the targets. And in this area, we'll do better next time. Unfortunately, now we are already towards the end of the financial year.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's just important to say this, which we didn't say earlier on. These issues that we deal with in the brand of climate change, I think we'd recall that when South Africa, when we submitted our long-term mitigation scenario, we did make a statement at end. It's not a state 43% reduction by 2025 and 34% by 34 by 42, whatever. And at there, we said, with the necessary support from the international community. So that on its own does indicate that this particular program would have to be dependent much more also on the international funding. So the LCMS does position to those things. Not that we have said Treasury or our department or our government must not fund this, but we do recognize that this is work that we are doing, by the way, on behalf of all other people who are developed countries, and therefore that's one area that we should continue to argue that they need funds. Secondly, just on this program of talks, maybe we should say that there are certain programs where Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we need to say that they are actually, we're discussing with people who are coming from two extreme ends. It's not just that it's an expectation for inputs to be made. When the inputs are made, they come from two extreme ends. It's highly likely that even now, when we finish with this regulation, somebody will put that to court. It's highly likely because we do have those imbalances of people who are looking at it. I mean, the mere fact that we were actually taken to court on this issue of the it's called scent line hunting, it's not what we spoke about last week. How the period which you need, or which is allowed for a lion to be hunted after being bred from insects. We argue, and still today, in our heart and heart of heart, is 2 years. But we have a community that took a matter to court and then said the ruling was made, as Judy was saying earlier on. The ruling was made that it's none of your business, it's a welfare issue. The Minister of Dam must now get into this field of welfare removal, and it must including the essence in the bush. So we don't quite know how it's, but I must say that I've also been a contribution point in this area. Because I've also said to colleagues, and I must disclose it here, colleagues in the branch, that as we work on these matters, we need to ensure that this element that agriculture does has got to deal with is also in place. Because we can put these regulations there, people will still say, but why is, as they are saying right now, why is the Department of Environment chickening out of managing this part of the work? And we are not chickening out. We are just doing what the court said we must do. If at the time when we place the regulations at public level, the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry has not yet completed those regulations,
Well, that's just what I want. That's it. So we want to move together as well. But we are trying to find them after Inrek, taking our chances and also pushing the other side. That's why the ministry that we're making next to just to see how far they are with the regulations. So there are things that are really quite issues of very distinct views, points of views that we're dealing with in our own society. It's not so much not anticipating what is to come, but it's the deeper sense and understanding of the issues themselves, that's where people are quite polarized.
Colleagues, right now we are now in the last program, environmental program. Where is chemicals on the way?
I can run both of them, picture. Thank you, all of the members. On the environmental program, where we have EMBER in respect of achieving our targets for a number of full-time equivalents for projects where we are employing people through the Standard Public Works program, we had achieved 8,696 full-time equivalents versus a target of 9,855. And our year target is 5,000. Dr. Preston is saying that we'll still meet the target by the end of the financial year, and she has got action plans for us to achieve them. Then part of then that target, they then an aggregation for the contribution of women and people with disabilities. Where we have achieved for women's opportunities at about 53%, but for people with disabilities, we did not meet the target of 2%. In Program 1, when I was talking about people with disabilities, I was talking about the internal staff of the department. Now, this is in the sector where we employ through our employment programs. People with disabilities, out of the 16,943 work opportunities, we have achieved 1.84% instead of 2%, which is about people, the number would be just over 100. So that's an area where we are supposed to be improving. Then another EMBER next is on the wetlands that have been rehabilitated. We have a target for a year of 115 target wetlands that must be rehabilitated, and we're then sitting at 81 wetlands under rehabilitation. And over and above that, honourable members, we have a target on suppression of wildfires, which we overachieved in December. That excludes the fires that were suppressed recently in the Cape, where we lost the pilot from the that's Mr. Maway, an accident that happened on Sunday. I think I should just mention that though we are extremely excited, the target was not behind in that area. We've been doing very well. And next, target in respect of the early warning reports and interventions for streamlining environmental authorizations. I'm going to ask Mr. Alfwill to come in and deal with all of those EMBERs so that we don't waste a lot of your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. On the quarterly early warning issues, the work was completed, but the fact is that the management meetings hadn't sat. So this was presented at MITEC in February. When we met in February, So it's yellow this quarter, but it's actually green. The next one deals with what you call the adoption regulations. These regulations have been drafted, and they are being considered at the Working Group 7 implementation workshop on the 10th of March. So this target will be achieved. On the next slide, the four legal instruments that are referred to here, two of them have been completed, the EIA regulations and the revised listing notices, and have been published. This work is the work that is linked to the operationalization of the One Environment system that the previous Parliament had completed. The other two elements are the financial provisioning regulations and the mine closure regulations. These two sets of regulations have actually been combined into one set of regulations. The reality that we experienced is that the complexities of the mining sector, we underestimated those complexities, and it has taken us a bit longer to develop these regulations under NEMA because of intensive consultation processes that we need to put together. However, we do have a draft of these regulations, and the DG is forwarding this draft because it deals with financial provisioning. We need to consult the Treasury formally on the substance of these regulations. it is in an advanced stage. The next issue is yellow because the lead on hydraulic fracturing is the Department of Mineral Resources, and they set up a hydraulic fracturing committee, and they did not meet in this quarter. So it's yellow because they didn't meet. But however, in addition to this, we have initiated a strategic environmental assessment of hydraulic fracturing in the Karoo Basin, and that work is actually fully integrated into our next year's AGP process. And then the last one is the mining review guideline. We had anticipated having the one environmental management system for mining completed by the end of this quarter. But unfortunately, there are still three sets of regulations outstanding for the full implementation of the One Environment system. That's the financial provisioning and mine closure regulations, the stockpiles and residues regulations under the Waste Act, and the water regulations under the National Water Act. And before we can do this mining review guideline, we need to have all the final approved regulations in place. So we have the terms of reference already developed, but we can't implement it until all the regulations are finalized for that system. So unfortunately, this will actually be a red at the end of the year. Thank you.
Let's continue to do with the last program, chemical and waste. Then we will take all of them in the discussions.
Thank you, Chair. On chemicals and waste, we are behind those work in progress on EMBA with the healthcare risk waste management regulations. The challenge here, honourable members, the regulations and the norms and standards have been drafted. The challenge is alignment with the Department of Health. We had a process at official level, and I also intervened, had bilaterals with the DG of Health, wherein we were going to regulate how healthcare is managed in hospitals and public, even other medical practitioners, doctors, and so on.
it does those things that after we've had the meeting, the colleagues in health continue to have their own, draft their own regulations. In essence, they want to self-regulate themselves, and this is a matter that we've escalated at ministerial level, because again, it poses a challenge of wrestling and player within the Department of Health. And the key, if I were to give you an example, most of the treatment facilities in hospitals like incinerators, some hospitals operate them at low temperature levels, and therefore they do not really fix the waste stream appropriately. We are then also supposed to develop norms and standards for the treatment efficiency of operations for non-combustion technologies. The incinerator is a combustion technology, and there are guidelines in terms of how those should be operated. Now I wanted to cover the autoclaves type other instruments, even using some of the chemical-based instruments, so that the efficiencies are achieved, because when waste stream is not treated properly, even in the medical field, it still poses a hazard both for the environment and also for the health of citizens. Then the other norm and standard is that of preparation of the waste-derived fuel. Again, if you use the example of the pyrolysis, the standard would therefore be setting what the output or that pyrolysis plant would be, or the quality and the, that comes out as a fuel from that treatment facility. So those are the areas where we are in that slide. The matter we then going to be dealt with at ministerial level. Again, now we are in March, we are likely maybe not to conclude, but the documents are ready for finalization if there is an agreement between the two departments. Next, in the next areas, the permitting of unlicensed landfill sites. We were targeting 40 landfill sites at the time in December. We had processed 32 landfill sites, by December. So we'll meet our target of 40 landfill sites permitted in this financial year. Then the buyback centers, the suppression, I think, is out. We had, instead of 11, our target is 11 buyback centers. We had only achieved to establish 2 buyback centers. The trick, honorable members, with this area is whether we continue basically, because we have a number of biogas centers established, but they're not as functional because of the issues that are related to the commercial viability, or at least the economics of managing that waste stream. So people take the materials to the buyback center, and the buyback center must pay for those materials as they get deposited to them. And they can only sustain that if there is a recycling opportunity that is there. And in light of the fact that we've not been able to grow our recycling sector, and following the amendment of the Waste Act, we had outlined that the NISA is going to publish a crisis strategy which has been processed, and we hope that the economy then would make sense in future. So the 11 buyback centers possibly is not achievable in this financial year because of the economics that are associated with that. And Dr. Preston is back, and so he can add if necessary. And then lastly, on the matter of chemicals, we have a target that indicator on the number of chemical management instruments developed and implemented. We had 3 instruments: National Implementation Plan for the Stockholm Convention was to be updated, the phase-out plan for mercury in respect of the study of on impact of Minamata Convention that was going to be conducted, and then the lead phase-out process also had started. So where we had a delay is on the instrument of dealing with mercury, and basically we had to process a service provider, and that service provider would work with the industry to
check and assess our readiness to serve out Maturi as a country. And basically that's what we would use when we then table the report to Parliament. So at this point in time, we are in progress and we think that we'll achieve that target by the end of the end of the financial year. And that is all in respect of the Kenya Waste report. Thank you.
Hanfo. Let's say members, Dr. Sadem.
I was intimidated by the load at the door. There's no eating and drinking in the meeting rooms. Thank you.
Continue to say what you want to say.
My question might be out, but I'm looking to the people as said they are employed hand in hand with the Department of Public Works. Just to know their condition or their employment condition, are they allowed to work in somebody's yard, or they are there? Because if I can get a clarity on that, is it official that they are seen maybe in the building somebody's yard or cleaning somebody's yard? Just to get a clarity on that. Thank you.
So, just on the slide that talks to the percentage of unlicensed waste disposal sites authorized per annum. I did refer to the annex there, and I've seen that you're indicating that there are no challenges, and by now that you might have done 85%. But I'm not very sure it's whether 85% was affected. My interest is whether in that area you will achieve everything, so you will be able to license or provide authorization to all of them as and when you receive all these applications.
No, thanks. I think one of the officials, the DDG, has covered me on page 20. Around the number of interventions for streamlining environmental authorities. Candidly indicated that by December it was 28. But what I just want to check now, beyond December, given the importance of us in terms of me and NUMA ensuring that lines comply, is there a commitment that actually will turn that rate into green? Around the environmental authorizations. Even the flora of mines that are being established across the country. The last one, I think it's the same years you covered me as well. Yeah, this is the question.
That's a simple one. I just can't understand the percentage of unlicensed waste disposal sites authorized per annum. The unlicensed disposal sites, but the authorized per annum. I just need a little explanation around that.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the web line, with a target of 115%, which was not met, how can we help to improve? Thank you.
From the white lines. It's after, because now, if we are saying we might have to close down your buyback facilities because we have not created industries where we are residing, what informs us to create the buyback in the first place? Because
You would have thought that we create such a target because we know that we will have the capacity, or would have ensured capacity to recycle, and therefore there would be avenues where these buyback entities are processed. Now, are we sleeping on the job? Putting, what do they say, a cup before the horse? Never heard it. That's one issue. Now I've remembered what the issue was on air quality. For colleagues, we are having a deep sleep on the impact of those pollutants to our people. Let's appreciate the value health study. But what is the regularity of making this deep sleep? Particularly in quality hotspots. Your Highveld, your South Ferry, your Bujanala. So, we'll do them when, as and when we have the money. But what is that response to the respiratory difficulties that our people might have, and the cardiovascular difficulty that our people might have, if that is our response? The last one, Minister, we know that we cannot hold somebody or a company responsible for making our people suffer as a result of policy because of the need of the air in the asset. Therefore, you can't go to a particular country. How do we deal with the reality that, in fact, that study will say to us, yes, there are people in Sibukeni, in Zambela, that are suffering as a result broadly of this policy. There are these mortality issues, maybe to say so. But my worry is there no way of us, and that is what we will put also, we were not here, Minister, when we raised the issue. Shouldn't the producer also pay in one or the other? Difficulties and the negative impacts that pollution has on our team. Even though science now can't allow us to zoom to high-speed minister, can't allow us to zoom to ESCOM or a particular unit of ESCOM, can't we find a way of us zooming and creating? We're talking about what are those asbestos? That indeed there is an approach now by the current state. Shouldn't that be an approach by the current state when it comes to pollution and victims of pollution as well? But of course, the current state should not take responsibility alone. Can we have this polluter also come into the party? Can't we have some instruments that we can create? The reality is that, yes, these matters are affecting us in a big way. I know I'm a sinus, Minnesota, I shall have that bang, I could have. You know, every time Nedji, now woman's anxiety, you're me feeling I'm a sinus. And I'm not the only one, everybody. Everybody from that area. Of course, also some sinus is respiratory. Now, I don't know whether there are other effects that have not popular, that have been caused by high speed. And others who are operating in that area. But if you can answer it now, Minister, no problem, but we are saying these polluters, we must find a way of them paying the victims and compensating in one way or the other victims of their polluting activities. Thank you.
Thank you. Good day, Chairperson and members, Honourable Minister Didi and colleagues. I'll answer first on the weapons question. It's March already, of course, so we have exceeded the target. It was set, it is green, it will be green. We did have a late start to the year with the working weapons program, partially linked to its being operated out of Sandy. From next year, it will be operated directly out of our branch in the department, and we don't anticipate any further problems with that, but we have met the target. The disability, I just want to mention there that in fact we keep numbers, ID numbers of everyone who works in our program, so we know the exact figures, and our figures do not agree with the figures that have been reported through the EPWP. So although it's given us 1.84, we think we are probably at about 2.4, and we have to sort out the data. But if it comes out as 1.84, then that's what it comes out as. But we do push very hard on the issue of disability. We are extremely committed to opportunities for people who are living with disabilities and have been for 20 years. On the issue of the gender, we will not meet the gender. Our figure is indicating 53%, the target is 35%. The DG has been extremely firm on our meeting list, but it's unlikely that will be green. And also on the person, on the FTEs, it's unlikely that we'll meet the target in this financial year, but over the 3-year MTF period, we'll certainly meet the target. Once again, this was due to a slow start in the financial year. I think just to mention the question that was asked about the people cleaning in somebody's yard, they're certainly not done with EPWP funding. It might be that there's clearing of invasive alien plants or some other work that's done on a farm or a plot of sorts. But if the impression was they're just doing some menial work in garden, then that's certainly not work that should be paid for by government and through these programs. And it certainly wouldn't be our programs, I'm sure, that would be doing that. DJ, I think those were the two.
All right. Yes, I think the other question that was linked to CWP was our public employment programs. Is there special the employment conditions? There are special employment conditions on our members for expanded public works programs. In order, as you recall, this is an intervention that is not aimed at attracting people from their formal employment. So there is a search in terms of the wage, how the wages are structured, they get training, the number of training days and all of that. So that, and also they are covered in terms of the corridor, Workers' Compensation Act in terms of health, so they are covered in that UIF in some case also is paid, so that those that fall pregnant can at least be given the opportunity to be ameliorated in terms of their own social status in our communities. So that is the answer. Then there are special conditions, and the conditions are more aimed at protecting the staff or the people that work in these programs, but at the same time not attract other people, because if the pay is comparable to formal employment, then this could end up attracting wrong people, because the programs are targeting unemployed people with low skill level in the main, and so on and so on. Then the other but to do useful work in terms of environmental outcomes, so it's balancing the environmental outcomes with social outcomes. The landfill sites, I remember I did say that it's 40 sites that targeted, and they will be, that target will be met. And in explaining for the Honorable Member Bonomi the unlicensed authorized Danam, we have done an audit of landfill sites in South Africa, and we then found that there are landfill sites that are operated without a license. A landfill site by its nature is a polluter, so it will pollute soils, it will pollute the water and so on. So we need to have it licensed so that the conditions, when you establish it, you put all the linings and the layers so that you prevent and minimize the contamination of soils and water. So that is what we mean when we say if they are not licensed, so they are operated illegally, then you go through a process of licensing them so that you meet the minimum requirements, both in terms of water as well as then the prevention of soil pollution. Secondly, some of the unlicensed dumping sites are not licensable, if that's the correct English. So those ones have to be closed. And closing them down also, there is a further requirement in terms of how that can be done. And it's not just closing the gates and say use another site. There is a rehabilitation of that area that must be undertaken. And lastly, the issue of the buyback centers, I think, Chair, you were asking the question. I think the theory that informed the establishment of buyback centers was that if you have its collection, its point where people take recyclables so that you remove them from landfill and they're taken there in an orderly kind of a business, and then you would get a deposit. If it's a bottle, then you drop it there and you get your money. But the economics did not then work out. If one says normally you say if there is demand, then there should be some kind of the supply and demand, and it would work automatically, and private sector would have an uptake of that. It has not, because there is underpricing. So somebody that's recycling is prepared to buy this bottle and at maybe 2 cents, when in actual fact they should be in 10 cents. And therefore, because there is no real economies of scale, there are few people that are recycling, then there's a monopoly in the area and so on. So it's because of the fact that there has not been it's not been a formalized sector per se, that has got a certain limits in terms of how price the waste is and so on and on. And once we sort out the price, it should be that everybody can see that this is a lucrative business, and they can then invest appropriately, both in recycling and also buyback centers would then make sense from the point of view that there will be somebody that will want to take the supply then of the materials would then be realized from that point of view. And lastly, in terms of the Waste Act, we talk about development of industry waste plants, and partly to establish a real full-scale recycling economy. So that's in essence the review and the rating on where you locate by the centers is quite is necessary for us at this point in time. So there was a theory at the time, and I think that practice has shown that it's not working, and we need not necessarily continue to then pump the resources where it's not going to bear the results that we want to achieve. I thought those were the key questions. And then the air quality, Judy, do you want to answer? Because I thought Honourable Member, maybe if you ask from the Minister, we answered last week in your absence, that yes, the science is such that it's not possible to attribute a pollutant from the air once it leaks to a particular company, whether Eskom, Sasol, or whoever. However, we do appreciate that there are impacts. That's why we are monitoring the ambient air quality, and that's why the Minister is then also publishing the regulations for at least annual reporting by all operators and various monitoring stations. as a compulsory requirement. And we thought that maybe there may be a point in us investigating a sufficient fund so that victims of the people like them who have those suffer from poor equality can have recourse. But that is going to require a lot of investigation, and we will still put resources to then undertake those investigations and make the proposals on how that such a fund can be established and who then contributes to the fund, including in the other players in the space. Thank you.
Thanks. And I was going to start with that last question that DG Dilish wanted to ask. Perhaps to say that the polluter pays principle is actually one of our major principles in the policy. Of it was established right from the processes of CONEP, that which was established in the legal framework, the policy framework of South Africa, that is in 1994 and ended up in 1996, somewhere in 1997. I used to call it Day of Our Lives, because that was the longest policy-making process, I think, in my time. So we have that policy. I think the issue here is how to enforce it. Just a reminder, or just a recollection of it. When the case of asbestos was dealt with in the Northern Cape, there were issues around, let me just say, the finality of that process was that companies which were suspected or thought to be alleged to be polluting were followed through until money was paid into the victims or for the victims. The unfortunate thing is that, if I may just put that as an issue as well, concerning it, that by that time, there was already, you know, there were many people who were already beginning to lose their lives. There were those who were dying, were those who were suffering already. And, you know, this is really a thought and what informs our proactive approach. So that with a case, and in a case like asbestos, I'm not sure the impact of whether there would be continuous or serious impact on mercury, all these other issues. But with a mineral like asbestos, it's an effect that's really quite irreversible. What do they call that? The mesothelioma. That sickness. When a person starts vomiting blood, they are gone. Even with the money that they have received, they would have received through that legal process. So this is a very, very serious matter that informs us going forward, even with this polluter-based principles, to also ensure that we close down on the pollution, on the impact itself on an ongoing basis, so that at least we can. And it's for that reason that you realize here that we have put in place these monitoring stations where on a continuous basis, there are attempts to ensure that industry complies, not meet the standards halfway, as the court has now recently on air quality, but to fully comply and ensuring that as we go forward, this matter is a thing of the past. There's no pollution. That old industry, by the way. New industries are coming into place. I think you remember that the Air Quality Act does say it is about 2020. Compliance. For the new industries, they comply now. But those that are still to come, they will have to comply by 2020. So those are some of the measures that we've put in place. What do we do about the past cases, like your case, Honorable Chair, and many others who are out there? I think we need to just let other states to do this work and explore various means to get to this conclusion. There are issues I do know that in South Africa, and somebody may probably just correct me if I'm wrong, that there is always a need for a causal link between the sickness and the actual cause of the sickness. There's always that argument that's in advance. I'm not sure in our law who necessarily the responsible department to deal with that, but I'm saying it's one of the things we have to
to look at, because at the time, you know, even like the asbestos case, people who have been affected already, they have to be, of course, a link determined, and it's really clearly identified and articulated. Whether there is, in a case now, as I say, we should investigate, in a case like now, whether there should be, there could be a, you know, a link directly with somebody who's living in the Sukuta area or living in the high-third area who gets lung diseases and so forth and so forth. The linkage is still going to be in the fact that we actually move, find mechanisms to actually deal with those, apart from having to prove beyond reasonable doubt that this actually the issue. Maybe people may say it's inherited from your great parents. So there are those arguments and the loopholes that are really close. So it's a matter to explore, really, to be honest. But whilst we are doing our work in terms of ensuring that the companies are offline, because we just don't need to rely on that part alone, especially of the past cases that we're investigating. The issues around, I just think that we need to follow up on the issue that Didi raises about the length, no, the buyback centers. I think the key word here in response is that there are programs that we embark upon as governments with good intentions, with all the base policies in place, with all the strategies in place. But as and when we implement, you find that there are lessons to be drawn. And then we learn those lessons. You then, you know, just tighten your screws better. Yesterday, Chair, where honorable members of the portfolio committee were present, in our summit of waste management, we dealt with this matter quite elaborately and indicated that having learned the lessons from setting up the buyback centers where they may not, or not even buyback centers, recycling initiatives and so on, it should be informed by the possibility of sustainability in those areas as we move on. Those are the lessons that we have learned in the past. Remember, there were buyback centers established within policy. We had as a waste stream the plastic bags at the time. People were using them for bottles, recyclable bottles and so forth. And then when there was no tight mechanism as in regulation, how do you then enforce processes of recycling? Now this Parliament has helped us a great deal. We passed a law last year that allows us to put a size on waste. We are continuing to do that, and therefore waste, South Africa, we're trying to move South Africa from being a throwaway society to a recycling society. Currently, the studies that we did as a department back then in 2011, I think, in 2011, suggest that our society in South Africa throws away 90% of our waste ends up in landfills. And 10% is recycled. Whereas in other advanced countries, 10% ends up in landfill sites, and 90% is recycled. So we want to change our equation to other direction, and therefore you realize that even where the buyback centers, whether it's a buyback center or it's a depot or it's whatever you call it, or it's a recycling plant, there will be good strategic base with understanding exactly that you know, we have learned from the past on how to do these things. And I think also a lesson that can be drawn from the current program that's been implemented through the Regista program is quite helpful for all of us, and even in creation of SMEs and so forth. And I think there are some of the things that we are learning even from the areas now. We are told that the waste pickers are saying, those who are operating at that level, no, don't formalize us too much. Because when we are formalized too much, you know, because there's very serious high competition at that level where they're operating, they may not be able to get the money that they're getting right now, realize the income. But we say there is in everything that we do in South Africa, small, medium, and micro enterprises. This last end means micro. You do formalize, but people can still operate at micro level. So that at least there's support and so on. Unlike if you don't know, you know, it's a kind of dog, if dogs also record a bit of lack of better way at that level. So I think that's the issue, Chair, that we're dealing with. With regards to the EPWP, I must embellish this point as well.
You see, in South Africa, we come from just completely different backgrounds. Currently, policy of this government that runs South Africa is that let's create job opportunities, and where we can, it should be jobs for people who are just jobless and not having anything to do, unable to put bread on the table. So this is what actually informs the framework that we currently have of your remuneration, stipend, payments, these other issues of safety, and so on and so on. So I think we need to make sure that these are good programs. We want, really asking that the Commission reiterate that. They are good programs. We need to improve on them. They are interventions. They are not a one and only resolution that we have as government, but they are making a difference in people's lives. May I as well, while I'm here, that if it wasn't for this program, these programs of EPWP, in this instance, I want to give to the Working on Fire program. This Western Cape province would have been terribly devastated than it is the fire ravaged this country. So people are proud. They are saying to us, we are having jobs, we are working, we are proud, we are not begging from anybody in to buy a bread. So, you know, their dignity is restored to some extent. And I think we need to just reiterate this again and again. It was the take of our people. So I thought that even as we talk about salaries, maybe the other issues with safety and so on, we need to put those things in mind. One of the things that we mustn't forget is that in these programs, people are actually trained under EPWP mechanisms for them to be able to do things better themselves, wherever they can be appointed and wherever they can go. Thank you. I'm not sure if there's anything that we have left behind, but yes.
Members, my apologies for it. It was after a year I was going straight to the House.
Yes.
But I think the rest of the department and the minister, colleagues will know that one of our responsibilities is just to track performance, to track whether the plans that you have put before us and before this Parliament of our people, whether those plans are being implemented. And really today it was that exercise. We have not finished the year, but it's just a mechanism to also make you even visit those plans that you put before Parliament and say, where are you in relation to those plans? But let's assure the minister that, you see, the correctness of the programs we have under environmental programs, rest assured we have had those discussions when we were dealing with the plans, with the annual plans, also when we're dealing with the annual reports, by the way, the BRRR processes. And we understand, in fact, some of us have even met those people we're talking about. We know what this means to them, but also the importance of the work that they do in protecting the environment. Apart from the salaries they get, maybe there might be an argument that maybe they can get more or less, whatever. The reality is that without those programs, they will not be getting anything, first of all. Secondly, without those programs, we will not have a means of intervening to save our environment. You know, by the way, it was last year or so where I saw the minister where we're trying to claim one dam, and it's in Pretoria somewhere. A dam that has all these things that were growing on top of that dam. Yes. So, yes, in Mabopane, yes. So these are very important programs. I'm speaking to those because you have spoken to them, Minister. Including the Working for Water. It's very unfortunate that we just heard that one of our workers had an accident and died on Sunday. We will have find a way of how to process that through the parliamentary matters and statements or even motions on that matter so that we stay to that. But you are right, without Working for Fire, we will have probably no Cape Town. because it would have bent to death if we didn't have this program. But what is also more important is that where our people are living, in the squalor where our people are living, in most instances, these fires happen there. They happen there. And when they happen, there is nobody except working for fire to come and assist them. Of course, we work with all the capacity that is there in municipalities and everywhere else in the provinces. But it's quite a very important program that speaks to the needs of our people. But by the way, all your programs from 1 to 7, or 1 is administration, from 2 to 7, they speak to a matter that we must deal with in the environmental space. So there is no program that is a necessary. And that's why I was asking the question, I agree with you, Minister, that yes, we need to be assisted by those that have, to lack of a better way, standards, our country in the past, its history. History has recorded what they did. But while they come in, we must have some form of budget to deal with climate change. We must have some form of budget. Why will have assistance from whoever indeed the must be this fund from developed countries? Better, I think the EFF must continue to say they must pay back. They must pay back to the devastation that they caused and the underdevelopment that they caused in one way or the other. That's why the Green Fund under the auspices of the United Nations. But having said that, colleagues, from where we are seated, our view and our sense is that we are making it. As a department, we can see progress that you are making on the plan that you yourself put before us last year. We can measure how far you have gone now, and indeed, come end of this financial year, which is March now, we are very sure that, in fact, the picture has long changed from what we have now in the fourth quarter. Has long changed in many areas. So you will also remember that when we got your annual report, we interacted with you on the annual report. I don't know of which year, but we told you that you are doing well. We told some entities that they are doing well, and some that they are not doing well, we told them that they must go back to the drawing board and come back and do better. But from where we are seeing leadership, both at the political level and at an administrative level, that is indeed be able to meet the targets of the plan that you have put before us. And we would like to thank you, and again, as we have always been saying, keep on doing the good job. Those that have got some targets that still need to be attended to, go and attend to those targets so that when we meet again, you can say that this is where we were, and as we ended the year, we had met all the targets, except those that was impossible to meet. With those words, Minister, we are very much thankful to what we have been presented here. DG, we are very much thankful, and all the administrative staff, the DGGs, the chief directors, the directors, and the obviously, we have done pretty well. Of course, as they always say, it's only people who are at work that know that I need to do better here. Those who are not doing anything, they won't even make this analysis of where they need to improve, because they're doing nothing. So you are therefore doing a lot. But of course, you can also improve. Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you, DG. This meeting is now concluded and adjourned until next week, Tuesday. We are not meeting on the 30th. On Friday. We are therefore not having a meeting. Thank you very much. Oh, members, if you can. Minister of the department, you are allowed to leave. Members, just a few minutes of your time to what belongs.
Members, I hope if you were sitting there, you did look at the minutes. There's just one part that we just want to correct, and that part is under one welcome and opening. The chairperson of the Committee on Environment welcomed and all members in the tribal course of the meeting. The person proceeded and tabled at the end of the meeting in his opening remarks. He mentioned that South Africa's main energy source is coal. However, the very same coal, yes, that's where, is not helpful in our fight against high greenhouse gas emissions, which has a negative impact to the environment. That's all. That's all that has been said. So therefore, the argument that we need to get other sources of energy rather than be dependent on coal. That's all that was saying there. So that's the wording that we just need to change. Now, and we then start from page one, colleagues. If we're okay on page one, all spelling and everything else. Page two, we are okay with the B triple E Mulewa there, we are fine. Page four, it has this addition that I've made on greenhouse gas emissions. Page five, okay.
Usually do not want to engage on spendings and so on. On page 3,
yes.
Under 2, the second line, by the Department in combating of the wildlife crimes in South Africa, not on.
Oh.
And then the page 4, on the second bullet from the top, is committee of inquiry.
Yes.
Are you there, sir?
Committee resolutions.
Yes.
The department should brief the committee on progress on the record by the committee of inquiry.
Oh.
No, you are right. It's just, these are just the omissions. Yeah. Is there any move after this, corrections? Mavilo? Thank you. Kekana? Ralevogani. Samele Duan Kompumalanga. Samele Habuz. Ralevogani. Not in the agenda. Thank you. Thanks, colleagues. We can now go to the house. By the way, there is...